Moraine did not allow Matt to interrupt her. She raised her voice enough to be heard over him. When Fane returned to Lugard, Balzaman came to him in a dream. Fane abased himself and performed rites that would strike you deaf to hear the half of them, binding himself even more tightly to the Dark One. What is done in dreams can be more dangerous than what is done awake. Rand stirred at the sharp warning look, but she did not pause. He was promised great rewards, power over kingdoms after Balzaman's victory, and told that when he returned to Emmon's Field, he was to mark the three he had found. A halfman would be there, waiting for him with Trollocs. We know now how the Trollocs came to the Two Rivers. There must have been an Ogier Grove and a waygate at Manetheran.
The most beautiful of all, Loyal said, except for Tavalin.
He had been listening as intently as everyone else.
Manetheran is remembered fondly by the Ogier.
Agomar formed the name silently, his eyebrows raised in wonder. Manetheran. Lord Agomar, Moraine said, I will tell you how to find the waygate of Mafal de Daranel. It must be walled up and a guard set, and none allowed near. The halfmen have not learned all of the ways yet, but that waygate is to the south and only hours from Faldara. The Lord of Faldara gave himself a shake as if he were coming out of a trance.
South? Peace, we don't need that. The lights shine on us. It shall be done.
Did Fane follow us through the ways? Perrin asked.
He must have done.
Moraine nodded. Fane would follow you three into the grave because he must. When the Murdrel failed at Emmon's Field, it brought Fane with the Trollocs on our trail. The Fade would not let Fane ride with him, although he thought he should have the best horse in the Two Rivers and ride at the head of the band. The Murdrel forced him to run with the Trollocs, and the Trollocs to carry him when his feet gave out. They talked so that he could understand, arguing about the best way to cook him when his usefulness was done. Fane claims he turned against the Dark One before they reached the Taran. But sometimes his greed for his promised rewards seeps into the open. When we had escaped across the Taran, the Murdrel took the Trollocs back to the closest waygate in the Mountains of Mist, and sent Fane across alone. He thought he was free then, but before he reached Bearlon, another Fade found him, and that one was not so kind. It made him sleep doubled up on himself in a Trolloc kettle at night, to remind him of the price of failure. That one used him as far as Shadar Logoth. By then Fane was willing to give the Murdrel his mother if it would free him, but the Dark One never willingly loosens a hold he has gained. What I did there, sending an illusion of our tracks and smell off toward the mountains, fooled the Murdrel, but not Fane. The Halfmen did not believe him. Afterward, they dragged him behind them on a leash. Only when we seemed to keep always just ahead, no matter how hard they pressed, did some begin to credit him. Those were the four who returned to Shadar Logoth. Fane claims it was Balzaman himself who drove the Murdrel. Agomar shook his head contemptuously.
The Dark One? Pah! The man's lying or mad. If Heartsbane were loose, we'd all of us be dead by now, or worse.
Fane spoke the truth as he saw it, Moraine said. He could not lie to me, though he hid much. His words. Balzaman appeared like a flickering candle flame, vanishing and reappearing, never in the same place twice. His eyes seared the Murdrel, and the fires of his mouth scourged us.
Something, Lan said, drove four Fades to where they feared to go. A place they fear almost as much as they fear the wrath of the Dark One.
Agomar grunted as if he had been kicked. He looked sick. It was evil against evil in the ruins of Shadar Logoth, Moraine continued. Foul fighting vile. When Fane spoke of it, his teeth chattered and he whimpered. Many Trollocs were slain, consumed by Mashadar and other things, including the Trolloc that held Fane's leash. He fled the city as if it were the pit of doom at Shael Ghul. Fane believed he was free at last. He intended to run until Balzaman could never find him again, to the ends of the earth if necessary. Imagine his horror when he discovered that the compulsion to hunt did not lessen. Instead, it grew stronger and sharper with every day that passed. He could not eat except what he could scavenge while he hunted you, beetles and lizards snatched while he ran, half-rotten refuse dug from midden heaps in the dark of night. Nor could he stop until exhaustion collapsed him like an empty sack. And as soon as he had strength to stand again, he was driven on. By the time he reached Camelin, he could feel his quarry even when it was a mile away. Here in the cells below, he would sometimes look up without realizing what he was doing. He was looking in the direction of this room. Rand had a sudden itch between his shoulder blades. It was as if he could feel Fane's eyes on him then, through the intervening stone. The Aes Sedai noticed his uneasy shrug, but she went on implacably. If Fane was half mad by the time he reached Camelin, he sank even further when he realized that only two of those he sought were there. He was compelled to find all of you, but he could do no other than follow the two who were there either. He spoke of screaming when the waygate opened in Camelin. The knowledge of how to do it was in his mind. He does not know how it came there. His hands moved of their own accord, burning with the fires of Baalzaman when he tried to stop them. The owner of the shop, who came to investigate the noise, Fane murdered. Not because he had to, but out of envy that the man could walk freely out of the cellar, while his feet carried him inexorably into the ways.
"Then Fane was the one you sensed following us," Egwene said.
Lan nodded.
"How did he escape the Black Wind?"
Her voice shook. She stopped to swallow.
"It was right behind us at the waygate." "He escaped, and he did not," Moraine said. "The Black Wind caught him, and he claimed to understand the voices. Some greeted him as like to them. Others feared him. No sooner did the wind envelop Fane than it fled."
"The light preserve us."
Loyal's whisper rumbled like a giant bumblebee.
"Pray that it does," Moraine said.
"There is much yet hidden about Padan Fane, much I must learn. The evil goes deeper in him and stronger than in any man I have yet seen. It may be that the Dark One, in doing what he did to Fane, impressed some part of himself on the man, perhaps even unknowing, some part of his intent. When I mentioned the Eye of the World, Fane clamped his jaws shut, but I felt something knowing behind the silence. If only I had the time now. But we cannot wait."
"If this man knows something," Agomar said, "I can get it out of him."
His face held no mercy for Dark Friends. His voice promised no pity for Fane.
"If you can learn even a part of what you will face in the Blight, it's worth an extra day. Battles have been lost for not knowing what the enemy intends."
Moraine sighed and shook her head ruefully.
"My lord, if we did not need at least one good night's sleep before facing the Blight, I would ride within the hour, though it meant the risk of meeting a Trolloc raid in the dark. Consider what I did learn from Fane. 3 years ago, the Dark One had to have Fane brought to Sheol Ghul to touch him, despite the fact that Fane is a Dark Friend dedicated to his marrow. 1 year ago, the Dark One could command Fane, the Dark Friend, through his dreams. This year, Baalzaman walks in the dreams of those who live in the light, and actually appears, if with difficulty, at Shadar Logoth. Not in his own body, of course, but even a projection of the Dark One's mind, even a projection that flickers and cannot hold, is more deathly dangerous to the world than all the Trolloc hordes combined. The seals on Sheol Ghul are weakening desperately, Lord Agomar. There is no time."
Agomar bowed his head in acquiescence, but when he raised it again, there was still a stubborn set to his mouth.
"Aes Sedai, I can accept that when I lead the lances to Tarwyn's Gap, we will be no more than a diversion or a skirmish on the outskirts of the real battle. Duty takes men where it will as surely as does the pattern, and neither promises that what we do will have greatness. But our skirmish will be useless, even should we win, if you lose the battle. If you say your party must be small, I say well and good. But I beg you to make every effort to see that you can win. Leave these young men here, Aes Sedai. I swear to you that I can find 3 experienced men with no thought of glory in their heads to replace them. Good swordsmen, who are almost as handy in the Blight as Lan. Let me ride to the Gap, knowing that I have done what I can to help you be victorious."
"I must take them and no others, Lord Agomar," Moraine said gently.
They are the ones who will fight the battle at the eye of the world.
Agomar's jaw dropped, and he stared at Rand and Matt and Perrin. Suddenly the Lord of Faldara took a step back, his hand groping unconsciously for the sword he never wore inside the fortress.
They aren't. You are not Red Aja, Moraine said I. But surely not even you would.
Sudden sweat glistened on his shaven head.
They are Ta'veren, Moraine said smoothly. The pattern weaves itself around them. Already the Dark One has tried to kill each of them more than once. Three Ta'veren in one place are enough to change the life around them as surely as a whirlpool changes the path of a straw. When the place is the eye of the world, the pattern might weave even the Father of Lies into itself and make him harmless again.
Agomar stopped trying to find his sword, but he still looked at Rand and the others doubtfully.
Moraine said I, if you say they are, then they are. But I cannot see it. Farm boys. Are you certain, Aes Sedai?
The old blood, Moraine said. Split out like a river breaking into 1,000 times 1,000 streams. But sometimes streams join together to make a river again. The old blood of Manetheran is strong and pure in almost all these young men. Can you doubt the strength of Manetheran's blood, Lord Agomar?
Rand glanced sideways at the Aes Sedai.
Almost all.
He risked a look at Nynaeve. She had turned back to watch as well as listen, though she still avoided looking at Lan. He caught the wisdom's eye. She shook her head. She had not told the Aes Sedai that he was not Two Rivers born.
What does Moraine know?
Manetheran, Agomar said slowly, nodding. I would not doubt that blood.
Then more quickly.
The wheel brings strange times. Farm boys carry the honor of Manetheran into the Blight. Yet if any blood can strike a fell blow at the Dark One, it would be the blood of Manetheran. It shall be done as you wish, Aes Sedai.
Then let us go to our rooms, Moraine said. We must leave with the sun, for time grows short. The young men must sleep close to me. Time is too short before the battle to allow the Dark One another strike at them. Too short.
Rand felt her eyes on him, studying him and his friends, weighing their strength, and he shivered. Too short. Chapter 48 The Blight. The wind whipped Lan's cloak, sometimes making him hard to see, even in the sunlight, and Ingtar and the 100 lances Lord Agomar had sent to escort them to the border, in case they met a Trolloc raid, made a brave display in double column with their armor and their red pennants, and their steel-clad horses led by Ingtar's Grey Owl banner. They were easily as grand as 100 of the Queen's guards, but it was the towers just inside ahead of them that Rand studied. He had had all morning to watch the Shinaran lances. Each tower stood tall and solid atop a hill, half a mile from its neighbor. East and west others rose, and more beyond those. A broad, walled ramp spiraled around each stone shaft, winding all the way around by the time it reached the heavy gates, halfway to the crenellated top. A sortie from the garrison would be protected by the wall until it reached the ground, but enemies striving to reach the gate would climb under a hail of arrows and stones and hot oil from the big kettles poised on the outward flaring ramparts above. A large steel mirror, carefully turned down, away from the sun now, glittered atop each tower, below the high iron cup, where signal fires could be lit when the sun did not shine. The signal would be flashed to towers further from the border, and by those to still others, and so relayed to the Heartland fortresses, from where the lances would ride to turn back the raid. Were times normal, they would. From the two nearest tower tops, men watched them approach. Just a few men on each, peering curiously through the crenels. In the best of times, the towers were only manned enough for self-defense, depending more on stone walls than strong arms to survive. But every man who could be spared, and more, was riding to Tarwyn's Gap. The fall of the towers would not matter if the lances failed to hold the gap. Rand shivered as they rode between the towers. It was almost as if he had ridden through a wall of colder air. This was the border. The land beyond looked no different from Shinar, but out there,
Somewhere beyond the leafless trees was the Blight. Ingtar lifted a steel fist to halt the lances short of a plain stone post inside of the towers. A border post marking the boundary between Shinar and what once was Malkir.
Your pardon, Moraine Aes Sedai. Pardon, Daishan. Pardon, Builder.
Lord Agomar commanded me to go no further.
He sounded unhappy about it, disgruntled at life in general.
That is as we planned, Lord Agomar and I, Moraine said.
Ingtar grunted sourly.
Pardon, Aes Sedai.
He apologized, not sounding as if he meant it.
To escort you here means we may not reach the gap before the fighting is done. I am robbed of the chance to stand with the rest, and at the same time I am commanded not to ride one step beyond the border post, as if I had never before been in the Blight. And my Lord Agomar will not tell me why.
Behind the bars of his face guard, his eyes turned the last word into a question to the Aes Sedai. He scorned to look at Rand and the others. He had learned they would accompany Lan into the Blight.
He can have my place, Matt muttered to Rand.
Lan gave them both a sharp look. Matt dropped his eyes, his face turning red.
Each of us has his part in the pattern, Ingtar, Moraine said firmly. From here we must thread ours alone.
Ingtar's bow was stiffer than his armor made it.
As you wish it, Aes Sedai. I must leave you now, and ride hard in order to reach Tarwin's Gap. At least I will be allowed to face Trollocs there.
Are you truly that eager, Nynaeve asked, to fight Trollocs?
Ingtar gave her a puzzled look, then glanced at Lan, as if the warder might explain.
That is what I do, lady, he said slowly. That is why I am.
He raised a gauntleted hand to Lan, open palm, toward the warder.
Saravya ninto mashima taishite, Daishan. Peace, favor your sword.
Pulling his horse around, Ingtar rode east with his bannermen and his 100 lances. They went at a walk, but a steady pace, as fast as armored horses could manage with a far distance yet to go.
What a strange thing to say, Egwene said. Why do they use it like that? Peace.
When you have never known a thing except a dream, Lan replied, heeling Mondarb forward, it becomes more than a talisman. As Rand followed the warder past the stone border post, he turned in his saddle to look back, watching Ingtar and the lances disappear behind barren trees, and the border post vanish. And last of all, the towers on their hilltops looking over the trees. All too soon they were alone, riding north under the leafless canopy of the forest. Rand sank into watchful silence, and for once even Matt had nothing to say.
That morning the gates of Faldara had opened with the dawn. Lord Agelmar, armored and helmeted now like his soldiers, rode with the Black Hawk banner and the three foxes from the east gate toward the sun, still only a red sliver above the trees. Like a steel snake undulating to mounted kettledrums, the column wound its way out of the town four abreast, Agelmar at its head, hidden in the forest before its tail left Faldara Keep. There were no cheers in the streets to speed them on their way, only their own drums and their pennants cracking in the wind, but their eyes looked toward the rising sun with purpose. Eastward they would join other steel serpents from Falmoran, behind King Isar himself with his sons at his side, and from Ancor Dale, that held the eastern marches and guarded the spine of the world. From Mos Shirara and Fal Sion and Camran Khan, and all the other fortresses in Shinar, great and small. Joined into a greater serpent, they would turn north to Tarwin's Gap. Another exodus had begun at the same time, using the King's Gate that led out on the way to Falmoran. Carts and wagons, people mounted and people afoot, driving their livestock, carrying children on their backs, faces as long as the morning shadows. Reluctance to leave their homes, perhaps forever, slowed their feet, yet fear of what was coming spurred them, so that they went in bursts, feet dragging, then breaking into a run for a dozen paces, only to fall back once more, to shuffling through the dust. A few paused outside the town to watch the soldiers' armored line winding into the forest. Hope blossomed in some eyes, and prayers were muttered. Prayers for the soldiers, prayers for themselves, before they turned south again, trudging.
The smallest column went out of the Malkir Gate. Left behind were a few who would remain, soldiers and a sprinkling of older men, their wives dead and their grown children making the slow way south. A last handful so that whatever happened in Tarwin's Gap, Faldara would not fall undefended. Ingtar's gray owl led the way, but it was Moraine who took them north. The most important column of all, and the most desperate. For at least an hour after they passed the border post, there was no change in land or forest. The water kept them at a hard pace, as fast a walk as the horses could maintain, but Rand kept wondering when they would reach the Blight. The hills became a little higher, but the trees and the creepers and the underbrush were no different than what he had seen in Shinar, gray and all but leafless. He began to feel warm enough to sling his cloak across the pommel of his saddle. "This is the best weather we've seen all year," Egwene said, shrugging out of her own cloak. Nynaeve shook her head, frowning as if listening to the wind. "It feels wrong." Rand nodded. He could feel it, too, though he could not say what it was exactly he was feeling. The wrongness went beyond the first warmth he could remember out of doors this year. It was more than the simple fact that it should have been so warm this far north. It must be the Blight. But the land was the same. The sun climbed high, a red ball that could not give so much warmth despite the cloudless sky. A little while later, he unbuttoned his coat. Sweat trickled down his face. He was not the only one. Matt took his coat off, openly displaying the golden ruby dagger, and wiped his face with the end of his scarf. Blinking, he rewound the scarf into a narrow band low over his eyes. Nynaeve and Egwene fanned themselves. They rode slumped as if they were wilting. Loyal undid his high-collared tunic all the way down, and his shirt as well. The Ogier had a narrow strip of hair up the middle of his chest, as thick as fur. He muttered apologies all around.
"You must forgive me. Steading Shangtai is in the mountains and cool."
His broad nostrils flared, drawing in air that was becoming warmer by the minute.
"I don't like this heat and damp."
It was damp, Rand realized. It felt like the mire in the depths of summer, back in the Two Rivers. In that boggy swamp, every breath came as if through a wool blanket soaked in hot water. There was no soggy ground here, only a few ponds and streams, trickles to someone used to the waterwood. But the air was like that in the mire. Only Perrin, still in his coat, was breathing easily. Perrin and the warder. There were a few leaves now, on the trees that were not evergreen. Rand reached out to touch a branch and stopped with his hand short of the leaves. Sickly yellow mottled the red of the new growth, and black flecks like disease.
"I told you not to touch anything." The warder's voice was flat.
He still wore a shifting cloak, as if heat made no more impression on him than cold. It almost made his angular face seem to float unsupported above Mondarb's back.
"Flowers can kill in the Blight, and leaves maim. There's a little thing called a stick that likes to hide where the leaves are thickest, looking like its name, waiting for something to touch it. When something does, it bites. Not poison. The juice begins to digest, the sticks pray for it. The only thing that can save you is to cut off the arm or leg that was bitten. But a stick won't bite unless you touch it. Other things in the Blight will."
Rand jerked his hand back, leaves untouched, and wiped it on his pants leg.
"Then we're in the Blight," Perrin said.
Strangely, he did not sound frightened.
"Just the fringe," Lan said grimly.
His stallion kept moving forward, and he spoke over his shoulder.
"The real Blight still lies ahead. There are things in the Blight that hunt by sound, and some may have wandered this far south. Sometimes they cross the mountains of doom. Much worse than sticks. Keep quiet and keep up if you want to stay alive."
He continued to set a hard pace, not waiting for an answer. Mile by mile, the corruption of the Blight became more apparent. Leaves covered the trees in ever greater profusion, but stained and spotted with yellow and black, with livid red streaks like blood poisoning. Every leaf and creeper seemed bloated, ready to burst at a touch. Flowers hung on trees, and weeds in a parody of spring, sickly pale and pulpy, waxen things that appeared to be rotting while Rand watched. When he breathed through his nose, the sweet stench of decay, heavy and thick, sickened him. When he tried breathing through his mouth, he almost gagged. The air tasted like a mouthful of spoiled meat. The horse's hooves made a soft squishing as rotten ripe things broke open under them. Matt leaned out of his saddle and spewed until his stomach was empty. Rand sought the void, but calmness was little help against the burning bile that kept creeping up his throat. Empty or not, Matt heaved again a mile later, bringing up nothing, and yet again after that. Egwene looked as if she wanted to be sick too, swallowing constantly. And Nynaeve's face was a white mask of determination, her jaw set and her eyes fixed on Moraine's back. The wisdom would not admit to feeling ill unless the Aes Sedai did first, but Rand did not think she would have to wait long. Moraine's eyes were tight and her lips pale. Despite the heat and damp, Loyal wrapped a scarf around his nose and mouth. When he met Rand's gaze, the Ogier's outrage and disgust were plain in his eyes.
"I had heard," he began,
his voice muffled by the wool, then stopped to clear his throat with a grimace.
"Father, it tastes like far. I had heard and read about the blight, but nothing could describe—"
His gesture somehow took in the smell as well as the eye-sickening growth.
"That even the Dark One should do this to trees. Far."
The warder was not affected, of course, at least not that Rand could see, but to his surprise, neither was Perrin. Or rather, not in the way the rest of them were. The big youth glared at the obscene forest through which they rode, as he might have at an enemy. Or the banner of an enemy. He caressed the axe at his belt as if unaware of what he was doing, and muttered to himself, half growling in a way that made the hair on Rand's neck stir. Even in full sunlight, his eyes glowed, golden and fierce. The heat did not abate as the bloody sun fell toward the horizon. In the distance to the north, mountains rose, higher than the mountains of mist, black against the sky. Sometimes an icy wind from the sharp peaks gusted far enough to reach them. The torrid humidity leached away most of the mountain chill, but what remained was winter cold compared to the swelter it replaced, if just for a moment. The sweat on Rand's face seemed to flash into beads of ice. As the wind died, the beads melted again, running angry lines down his cheeks, and the thick heat returned harder than before by comparison. For the instant the wind surrounded them, it swept away the fetter, yet he would have done without that, too, if he could have. The cold was the chill of the grave, and it carried the dusty must of an old tomb newly opened.
"We cannot reach the mountains by nightfall," Lan said, "and it is dangerous to move at night, even for a warder alone."
"There is a place not far off," Moraine said. "It will be a good omen for us to camp there." The warder gave her a flat look, then nodded reluctantly.
"Yes, we must camp somewhere. It might as well be there."
"The Eye of the World was beyond the high passes when I found it," Moraine said. "Better to cross the Mountains of Doom in full daylight at noon, when the Dark One's powers in this world are weakest."
"You talk as if the Eye isn't always in the same place."
Egwene spoke to the Aes Sedai, but it was Loyal who answered.
"No two among the Ogier have found it in exactly the same place. The Green Man seems to be found where he is needed, but it has always been beyond the high passes. They are treacherous, the high passes, and haunted by creatures of the Dark One."
"We must reach the passes before we need worry about them," Lan said. "Tomorrow we will be truly into the blight." Rand looked at the forest around him, every leaf and flower diseased, every creeper decaying as it grew, and he could not repress a shudder. "If this isn't truly the blight, what is?" Lan turned them westward at an angle to the sinking sun. The warder maintained the pace he had set before, but there was reluctance in the set of his shoulders. The sun was a sullen red ball just touching the treetops when they crested a hill and the warder drew rein. Beyond them to the west lay a network of lakes, the waters glittering darkly in the slanting sunlight, like beads of random size on a necklace of many strings. In the distance, circled by the lakes, stood jagged-topped hills, thick in the creeping shadows of evening. For one brief instant, the sun's rays caught the shattered tops, and Rand's breath stilled. Not hills. The broken remnants of seven towers. He was not sure if anyone else had seen it. The sight was gone as quickly as it came. The warder was dismounting, his face as lacking in emotion as a stone.
"Couldn't we camp down by the lakes?"
Nynaeve asked, patting her face with her kerchief. "It must be cooler down by the water."
"Light," Matt said. "I'd just like to stick my head in one of them. I might never take it out."
Just then something roiled the waters of the nearest lake, the dark water phosphorescing as a huge body rolled beneath the surface. Length on man-thick length sent ripples spreading, rolling on and on until at last a tail rose, waving a point like a wasp's stinger for an instant in the twilight, at least five spans into the air. All along that length, fat tentacles writhed like monstrous worms, as many as a centipede's legs. It slid slowly beneath the surface and was gone, only the fading ripples to say it had ever been. Rand closed his mouth and exchanged a look with Perrin. Perrin's yellow eyes were as disbelieving as he knew his own must be. Nothing that big could live in a lake that size.
Those couldn't have been hands on those tentacles. They couldn't have been.
On second thought, Matt said faintly, I like it right here just fine.
I will set guarding wards around this hill, Moraine said. She had already dismounted from Aldeeb. A true barrier would draw the attention we do not want like flies to honey. But if any creation of the Dark One or anything that serves the Shadow comes within a mile of us, I will know.
I'd be happier with the barrier, Matt said as his boots touched the ground. Just as long as it kept that thing on the other side.
Oh, do be quiet, Matt, Egwene said curtly, at the same time as Nynaeve spoke.
And have them waiting for us when we leave in the morning? You are a fool, Matrim Cawthon.
Matt glowered at the two women as they climbed down, but he kept his mouth shut. As he took Bella's reins, Rand shared a grin with Perrin. For a moment, it was almost like being home, having Matt saying what he should not at the worst possible time. Then the smile faded from Perrin's face. In the twilight, his eyes did glow, as if they had a yellow light behind them. Rand's grin slipped away, too.
It isn't like home at all.
Rand and Matt and Perrin helped Lan unsaddle and hobble the horses while the others began setting up the camp. Loyal muttered to himself as he set up the warder's tiny stove, but his thick fingers moved deftly. Egwene was humming as she filled the tea kettle from a bulging water bag. Rand no longer wondered why the warder had insisted on bringing so many full water skins. Setting the bay's saddle in line with the others, he unfastened his saddlebags and blanket roll from the cantle, turned, and stopped with a tingle of fear. The Ogier and the women were gone. So was the stove and all the wicker panniers from the pack horse. The hilltop was empty except for evening shadows. With a numb hand, he fumbled for his sword, dimly hearing Matt curse. Perrin had his axe out, his shaggy head swiveling to find the danger.
"Sheepherders," Lan muttered.
Unconcernedly, the warder strode across the hilltop, and at his third step, he vanished. Rand exchanged wide-eyed looks with Matt and Perrin, and then they were all darting for where the warder had disappeared. Abruptly, Rand skidded to a halt, taking another step when Matt ran into his back. Egwene looked up from setting the kettle atop the tiny stove. Nynaeve was closing the mantle on a second lit lantern. They were all there, Moraine sitting cross-legged, Lan lounging on an elbow, Loyal taking a book out of his pack. Cautiously, Rand looked behind him. The hillside was there as it had been, the shadowed trees, the lakes beyond sinking into darkness. He was afraid to step back, afraid they would all disappear again, and perhaps this time he would not be able to find them. Edging carefully around him, Perrin let out a long breath. Moraine noticed the three of them standing there, gaping. Perrin looked abashed and slipped his axe back into the heavy belt loop as if he thought no one might notice. A smile touched her lips.
"It is a simple thing," she said, "a bending, so any eye looking at us sees around us instead. We cannot have the eyes that will be out there seeing our lights tonight, and the blight is no place to be in the dark."
"Moraine Sedai says I might be able to do it," Egwene's eyes were bright. She says I can handle enough of the One Power right now.
Not without training, child, Moraine cautioned. The simplest matter concerning the One Power can be dangerous to the untrained and to those around them.
Perrin snorted, and Egwene looked so uncomfortable that Rand wondered if she had already been trying her abilities.
Nynaeve set down the lantern.
Together with the tiny flame of the stove, the pair of lanterns gave a generous light.
When you go to Tar Valon, Egwene, she said carefully, perhaps I'll go with you.
The look she gave Moraine was strangely defensive.
It will do her good to see a familiar face among strangers. She'll need someone to advise her besides Aes Sedai.
Perhaps that would be for the best, Wisdom, Moraine said simply.
Egwene laughed and clapped her hands.
Oh, that will be wonderful! And you, Rand, you'll come too, won't you?
He paused in the act of sitting across the stove from her, then slowly lowered himself.
He thought her eyes had never been bigger or brighter, or more like pools that he could lose himself in.
Spots of color appeared in her cheeks, and she gave a smaller laugh.
Perrin, Matt, you two will come, won't you? We'll all be together.
Matt gave a grunt that could have signified anything, and Perrin only shrugged, but she took it for assent.
You see, Rand, we'll all be together.
Light, but a man could drown in those eyes and be happy doing it. Embarrassed, he cleared his throat.
Do they have sheep in Tar Valon? That's all I know, herding sheep and growing tobacco.
I believe, Moraine said, that I can find something for you to do in Tar Valon. For all of you. Not herding sheep, perhaps, but something you will find interesting.
There, Egwene said, as if it were settled.
I know. I will make you my warder when I'm an Aes Sedai. You would like being a warder, wouldn't you?
My warder?
She sounded sure, but he saw the question in her eyes. She wanted an answer, needed it.
I'd like being your warder, he said. She's not for you, nor you for her. Why did Min have to tell me that?
Darkness came down heavily, and everyone was tired. Loyal was the first to roll over and ready himself for sleep, but others followed soon after. No one used their blankets except for a pillow. Moraine had put something in the oil of the lamps that dispelled the stench of the blight from the hilltop, but nothing diminished the heat. The moon gave a wavering, watery light, but the sun might have been at its zenith for all the cool the night had. Rand found sleep impossible, even with the Aes Sedai stretched out not a span away to shield his dreams. It was the thick air that kept him awake. Loyal's soft snores were a rumble that made Perrin's seem non-existent, but they did not stop weariness from claiming the others. The warder was still awake, seated not far from him with his sword across his knees, watching the night. To Rand's surprise, so was Nynaeve. The Wisdom looked at Lan silently for a long time, then poured a cup of tea and brought it to him. When he reached out with a murmur of thanks, she did not let go right away.
I should have known you would be a king, she said quietly.
Her eyes were steady on the warder's face, but her voice trembled slightly. Lan looked back at her just as intently. It seemed to Rand that the warder's face actually softened.
I am not a king, Nynaeve. Just a man. A man without as much to his name as even the meanest farmer's croft.
Nynaeve's voice steadied.
Some women don't ask for land or gold. Just the man.
And the man who would ask her to accept so little would not be worthy of her. You are a remarkable woman, as beautiful as the sunrise, as fierce as a warrior. You are a lioness, Wisdom.
A wisdom seldom weds.
She paused to take a deep breath, as if steeling herself.
But if I go to Tar Valon, it may be that I will be something other than a wisdom.
Aes Sedai marry as seldom as wisdoms. Few men can live with so much power in a wife, dimming them by her radiance, whether she wishes to or not.
Some men are strong enough. I know one such.
If there could have been any doubt, her look left none as to whom she meant.
All I have is a sword, and a war I cannot win, but can never stop fighting.
I've told you I care nothing for that. Light, you've made me say more than is proper already. Will you shame me to the point of asking you?
I will never shame you.
The gentle tone, like a caress, sounded odd to Rand's ears and the warder's voice, but it made Nynaeve's eyes brighten.
I will hate the man you choose because he is not me, and love him if he makes you smile.
No woman deserves the sure knowledge of widow's black as her bride price, you least of all. He set the untouched cup on the ground and rose.
I must check the horses.
Nynaeve remained there, kneeling, after he had gone. Sleep or no, Rand closed his eyes. He did not think the wisdom would like it if he watched her cry. Chapter 49 The Dark One Stirs. Dawn woke Rand with a start, the sullen sun pricking his eyelids as it peeked reluctantly over the treetops of the Blight. Even so early, heat covered the spoiled lands in a heavy blanket. He lay on his back with his head pillowed on his blanket roll, staring at the sky. It was still blue, the sky, even here. That, at least, was untouched. He was surprised to realize that he had slept. For a minute, the dim memory of a conversation overheard seemed like part of some dream. Then he saw Nynaeve's red-rimmed eyes. She had not slept, obviously. Lan's face was harder than ever, as if he had resumed a mask, and did not intend to let it slip again. Egwene went over and crouched beside the wisdom, her face concerned. He could not make out what they said. Egwene spoke, and Nynaeve shook her head. Egwene said something else, and the wisdom waved her away dismissively. Instead of going, Egwene bent her head closer, and for a few minutes the two women talked even more softly, with Nynaeve still shaking her head. The wisdom ended it with a laugh, hugging Egwene, and, by her expression, making soothing talk. When Egwene stood, though, she glared at the warder. Lan did not seem to notice. He did not look in Nynaeve's direction at all. Shaking his head, Rand gathered his things and gave his hands and face and teeth a hasty wash with a little water Lan allowed for such things. He wondered if women had a way of reading men's minds. It was an unsettling thought. All women are Aes Sedai. Telling himself he was letting the blight get to him, he rinsed out his mouth and hurried to get the bay saddled. It was more than a little disconcerting, having the campsite disappear before he reached the horses, but by the time his saddle girth was tight, everything on the hill winked back into view. Everyone was hurrying. The seven towers stood plain in the morning light, distant broken stumps, like huge rough hills that merely hinted at grandeur gone. The hundred lakes were a smooth, unruffled blue. Nothing broke the surface this morning. When he looked at the lakes and the ruined towers, he could almost ignore the sickly things growing around the hill. Lan did not seem to be avoiding looking at the towers, any more than he seemed to be avoiding Nynaeve, but somehow he never did, as he concentrated on getting them ready to go. After the wicker panniers were fastened on the pack horse, after every scrap and smudge and track were gone and everyone else was mounted, the Aes Sedai stood in the middle of the hilltop with her eyes closed, not even seeming to breathe. Nothing happened that Rand could see, except that Nynaeve and Egwene shivered despite the heat and rubbed their arms briskly. Egwene's hands suddenly froze in her arms, and she opened her mouth, staring at the wisdom. Before she could speak, Nynaeve also ceased her rubbing and gave her a sharp look. The two women looked at one another, then Egwene nodded and grinned, and after a moment Nynaeve did too, though her smile was only half-hearted. Rand scrubbed his fingers through his hair, already more damp with sweat than with the water he had splashed in his face. He was sure there was something in the silent exchange that he should understand. But that feather-light brush across his mind vanished before he could grasp it.
"What are we waiting for?"
Matt demanded, the low band of his scarf across his forehead. He had his bow across the pommel of his saddle with an arrow knocked, and his quiver pulled around on his belt for an easy reach. Moraine opened her eyes and started down the hill.
"For me to remove the last vestige of what I did here last night. The residues will have dissipated on their own in a day, but I will not take any risk I can avoid now. We are too close, and the shadow is too strong here. Lan?"
The warder only waited for her to settle in Aldeeb's saddle before he led them north, toward the Mountains of Doom, looming in the near distance. Even under the sunrise, the peaks rose black and lifeless, like jagged teeth. In a wall they stretched east and west as far as the eye could see.
"Will we reach the eye today, Moraine Sedai?"
Egwene asked. The Aes Sedai gave Loyal a sidelong look.
"I hope that we will. When I found it before, it was just the other side of the mountains, at the foot of the high passes."
"He says it moves," Matt said, nodding at Loyal.
"What if it isn't where you expect?"
"Then we will continue to hunt until we do find it. The Green Man senses need, and there can be no need greater than ours. Our need is the hope of the world." As the mountains drew closer, so did the true blight. Where a leaf had been spotted black and mottled yellow before, now foliage fell wetly while he watched, breaking apart from the weight of its own corruption. The trees themselves were tortured, crippled things, twisted branches clawing at the sky as if begging mercy from some power that refused to hear. Ooze slid like pus from bark cracked and split. As if nothing truly solid was left to them, the trees seemed to tremble from the passage of the horses over the ground.
"Look as if they want to grab us," Matt said nervously.
Nynaeve gave him an exasperated, scornful look, and he added fiercely,
"Well, they do look it."
"And some of them do want it," the Aes Sedai said. Her eyes over her shoulder were harder than Lan's for an instant.
"But they want no part of what I am, and my presence protects you."
Matt laughed uneasily, as if he thought it a joke on her part. Rand was not so sure. This was the Blight, after all.
"But trees don't move. Why would a tree grab a man, even if it could? We're imagining things, and she's just trying to keep us alert."
Abruptly he stared off to his left, into the forest. That tree, not 20 paces away, had trembled, and it was none of his imagination. He could not say what kind it was, or had been, so gnarled and tormented was its shape. As he watched, the tree suddenly whipped back and forth again, then bent down, flailing at the ground. Something screamed, shrill and piercing. The tree sprang back straight, its limbs entwined around a dark mass that writhed and spat and screamed. He swallowed hard and tried to edge Red away, but trees stood on every side and trembled. The bay rolled his eyes, white showing all the way around. Rand found himself in a solid knot of horseflesh, as everyone else tried to do the same as he. "Keep moving," Lan commanded, drawing his sword. The warder wore steel-backed gauntlets now, and his gray-green scaled tunic. "Stay with Moraine Sedai." He pulled Mondub around, not toward the tree and its prey, but in the other direction. With his color-shifting cloak, he was swallowed by the blight before the black stallion was out of sight.
"Close," Moraine urged.
She did not slow her white mare, but motioned the others to huddle nearer to her.
"Stay as close as you can."
A roar sprang up from the direction the water had gone. It beat at the air, and the trees quivered from it, and when it faded away, it seemed to echo still. Again the roar came, filled with rage and death.
"Lan," Nynaeve said, "he—"
The awful sound cut her off, but there was a new note in it. Fear. Abruptly it was gone.
"Lan can look after himself," Moraine said. "Ride, Wisdom."
From out of the trees, the warder appeared, holding his sword well clear of himself and his mount. Black blood stained the blade, and steam rose from it. Carefully, Lan wiped the blade clean with a cloth he took from his saddlebags, examining the steel to make sure he had gotten every spot. When he dropped the cloth, it fell apart before it reached the ground, even the fragments dissolving. Silently, a massive body leaped out of the trees at them. The warder spun Mondarb, but even as the warhorse reared, ready to strike with steel-shod hooves, Matt's arrow flashed, piercing the one eye in a head that seemed mostly mouth and teeth. Kicking and screaming, the thing fell, one bound short of them. Rand stared as they hurried past. Stiff hair like long bristles covered it, and it had too many legs, joining a body as big as a bear at odd angles. Some of them, at least, those coming out of its back, had to be useless for walking. But the finger-long claws at their ends tore the earth in its death agony. "Good shooting, sheepherder." Lan's eyes had already forgotten what was dying behind them, and was searching the forest. Moraine shook her head.
"It should not have been willing to come so close to one who touches the true source."
"Agamar said the blight stirs," Lan said,
Perhaps the Blight also knows a web is forming in the pattern.
Hurry!
Moraine dug her heels into Aldeeb's flanks.
We must get over the high passes quickly.
But even as she spoke, the Blight rose against them. Trees whipped in, reaching for them, not caring if Moraine touched the true source or not. Rand's sword was in his hand. He did not remember unsheathing it. He struck out again and again, the heron-marked blade slicing through corrupted limbs. Hungry branches jerked back severed, writhing stumps. He almost thought he heard them scream, but always more came, wriggling like snakes, attempting to snare his arms, his waist, his neck. Teeth bared in a rictus snarl, he sought the void, and found it in the stony, stubborn soil of the two rivers.
Manetherin!
He screamed back at the trees till his throat ached. The heron-marked steel flashed in the strengthless sunlight.
Manetherin! Manetherin!
Standing in his stirrups, Matt sent arrow after arrow flashing into the forest, striking at deformed shapes that snarled and gnashed uncounted teeth on the shafts that killed them, bit at the clawed forms fighting to get over them, to reach the mounted figures. Matt, too, was lost to the present.
Karai on Kaldazar!
He shouted as he drew fletchings to cheek and loosed.
Karai on Alessandra! Al Alessandra! Mordero d'Again pas duente cubillar! Al Alessandra!
Perrin also stood in his stirrups, silent and grim. He had taken the lead, and his axe hewed a path through forest and foul flesh alike, whichever came before him. Flailing trees and howling things shied from the stocky axeman, shying as much from the fierce golden eyes as from the whistling axe. He forced his horse forward, step by determined step. Fireballs streaked from Moraine's hands, and where they struck, a writhing tree became a torch. A toothed shape shrieked and beat with human hands, rent its own flaming flesh with fierce claws until it died. Again and again the warder took Mondarb into the trees, his blade and gauntlets dripping with blood that bubbled and steamed. When he came back now, more often than not, there were gashes in his armor, bleeding gashes in his flesh, and his warhorse stumbled and bled too. Each time the Aes Sedai paused to lay her hands on the wounds, and when she took them away, only the blood was left on unmarked flesh.
"I light signal fires for the half-men," she said bitterly. "Press on! Press on!"
They made their way one slow pace at a time. If the trees had not struck into the mass of attacking flesh as much as at the humans, if the creatures, no two alike, had not fought the trees in one another as much as to reach them, Rand was sure they would have been overwhelmed. He was not certain it would not happen still. Then a fluting cry arose behind them. Distant and thin, it cut through the snarling from the denizens of the Blight around them. In an instant, the snarling ceased, as if it had been sliced off with a knife. The attacking shapes froze, the trees went still. As suddenly as the things with legs had appeared, they melted away, vanishing into the twisted forest. The reedy shrill came again, like a cracked shepherd's pipes, and was answered in kind by a chorus, half a dozen singing among themselves, far behind.
"Worms," Lan said grimly, bringing a moan from Loyal. "They've given us a respite, if we have time to use it." His eyes were measuring the distance yet to the mountains. "Few things in the Blight will face a worm. Can it be avoided?"
He dug his heels into Mondarb's flanks.
"Ride!"
The whole party plunged after him, through a Blight that suddenly seemed truly dead, except for the piping behind.
"They were scared off by worms?" Matt said incredulously.
He was bouncing in his saddle, trying to sling his bow across his back.
"A worm,"
there was a sharp difference in the way the warder said it from the way Matt had,
"can kill a fade if the fade hasn't the Dark One's own luck with it. We have an entire pack on our trail. Ride! Ride!"
The dark peaks were closer now. An hour, Rand estimated, at the pace the warder was setting.
"Won't the worms follow us into the mountains?"
Egwene asked breathlessly, and Lan gave a sharp laugh.
"They won't. Worms are afraid of what lives in the high passes."
Loyal moaned again. Rand wished the Ogier would stop doing that. He was well aware that Loyal knew more about the Blight than any of them except Lan, even if it was from reading books in the safety of a steading. "But why does he have to keep reminding me that there's worse yet than we've seen?"
The blight flowed past, weeds and grasses splashing rotten under galloping hooves. Trees of the kinds they had earlier attacked did not so much as twitch, even when they rode directly under the twisted branches. The mountains of doom filled the sky ahead, black and bleak, and almost near enough to touch, it seemed. The piping came both sharp and clear, and there were squishing sounds behind them, louder than the things crushed under their hooves. Too loud, as if half-decayed trees were being crushed by huge bodies slithering over them. Too near. Rand looked over his shoulder. Back there, treetops whipped and went down like grass. The land began sloping upward toward the mountains, tilting enough so that he knew they were climbing. "We're not going to make it," Lan announced. He did not slow Mondarb's gallop, but his sword was suddenly in his hand again. "Watch yourself in the high passes, Moraine, and you'll get through."
"No, Lan,"
Nynaeve called.
"Be quiet, girl. Lan, even you cannot stop a worm pack. I will not have it. I will need you for the eye."
"Arrows," Matt called breathlessly. "The worms wouldn't even feel them," the warder shouted. "They must be cut to pieces. Don't feel much but hunger. Sometimes fear."
Clinging to his saddle with a death grip, Rand shrugged, trying to loosen the tightness in his shoulders. His whole chest felt tight, until he could hardly breathe, and his skin stung in hot pinpricks. The blight had turned to foothills. He could see the route they must climb once they reached the mountains, the twisting path and the high pass beyond, like an axe blow cleaving into the black stone.
"Light, what's up ahead that can scare what's behind? Light, help me, I've never been so afraid. I don't want to go any further. No further."
Seeking the flame in the void, he railed at himself.
"Fool. You frightened, cowardly fool. You can't stay here, and you can't go back. Are you going to leave Egwene to face it alone?"
The void eluded him, forming, then shivering into 1,000 points of light, reforming and shattering again, each point burning into his bones until he quivered with the pain and thought he must burst open.
"Light, help me, I can't go on. Light, help me."
He was gathering the bay's reins to turn back to face the worms or anything rather than what lay ahead, when the nature of the land changed. Between one slope of a hill and the next, between crest and peak, the blight was gone. Green leaves covered peacefully spreading branches. Wildflowers made a carpet of bright patches in grasses stirred by a sweet spring breeze. Butterflies fluttered from blossom to blossom, with buzzing bees and birds trilled their songs. Gaping, he galloped on until he suddenly realized that Moraine and Lan and Loyal had stopped, the others too. Slowly he drew rein, his face frozen in astonishment. Egwene's eyes were about to come out of her head, and Nynaeve's jaw had dropped.
"We have reached safety," Moraine said. "This is the Green Man's place, and the Eye of the World is here. Nothing of the Blight can enter here."
"I thought it was on the other side of the mountains," Rand mumbled. He could still see the peaks filling the northern horizon and the high passes.
"You said it was always beyond the passes."
"This place," said a deep voice from the trees, "is always where it is. All that changes is where those who need it are."
A figure stepped out of the foliage, a man-shape as much bigger than Loyal as the Ogier was bigger than Rand. A man-shape of woven vines and leaves, green and growing. His hair was grass, flowing to his shoulders. His eyes, huge hazelnuts. His fingernails, acorns. Green leaves made his tunic and trousers. Seamless bark, his boots. Butterflies swirled around him, lighting on his fingers, his shoulders, his face. Only one thing spoiled the verdant perfection. A deep fissure ran up his cheek and temple across the top of his head. And in that, the vines were brown and withered.
"The Green Man,"
Egwene whispered, and the scarred face smiled. For a moment it seemed as if the birds sang louder.
"Of course I am. Who else would be here?"
The hazelnut eyes regarded Loyal.
"It is good to see you, little brother. In the past, many of you came to visit me, but few of recent days."
Loyal scrambled down from his big horse and bowed formally.
"You honor me, tree brother. Tingu ma choshi,"
Qingshen.
Smiling, the green man put an arm around the Ogier's shoulders. Alongside Loyal, he looked like a man beside a boy.
There is no honoring, little brother. We will sing tree songs together, and remember the great trees and the steading, and hold the longing at bay.
He studied the others, just now getting down from their horses, and his eyes lit on Perrin.
A wolf, brother. Do the old times truly walk again, then?
Rand stared at Perrin. For his part, Perrin turned his horse so it was between him and the green man, and bent to check the girth. Rand was sure he just wanted to avoid the green man's searching gaze. Suddenly the green man spoke to Rand.
Strange clothes you wear, child of the dragon. Has the wheel turned so far? Do the people of the dragon return to the First Covenant? But you wear a sword. That is neither now nor then.
Rand had to work moisture in his mouth before he could speak.
I don't know what you're talking about. What do you mean?
The green man touched the brown scar across his head. For a moment he seemed confused.
I cannot say. My memories are torn and often fleeting, and much of what remains is like leaves visited by caterpillars. Yet I am sure... No, it is gone. But you are welcome here. You, Moraine Sedai, are more than a surprise. When this place was made, it was made so that none could find it twice. How have you come here?
Need, Moraine replied. My need, the world's need. Most of all is the world's need. We have come to see the eye of the world.
The green man sighed, the wind sighing through thick-leaved branches.
Then it has come again. That memory remains whole. The Dark One stirs. I have feared it. Every turning of years, the blight strives harder to come inside. And this turn, the struggle to keep it out, has been greater than ever since the beginning. Come, I will take you.
Chapter 50 Meetings at the Eye. Leading the bay, Rand followed the green man with the other Emmonsfielders, all staring as if they could not decide whether to look at the green man or the forest. The green man was a legend, of course, with stories told about him and the Tree of Life in front of every fireplace in the Two Rivers, and not just for the children. But after the blight, the trees and flowers would have been a wonder of normality, even if the rest of the world was not still trapped in winter. Perrin hung a little to the rear. When Rand glanced back, the big, curly-haired youth looked as if he did not want to hear anything else the green man had to say. He could understand that.
Child of the dragon.
Warily he watched the green man, walking ahead with Moraine and Lan, butterflies surrounding him in a cloud of yellows and reds.
What did he mean? No, I don't want to know.
Even so, his step felt lighter, his legs springier. The uneasiness still lay in his gut, churning his stomach, but the fear had become so diffuse, it might as well be gone. He did not think he could expect more, not with the blight half a mile away, even if Moraine was right about nothing from the blight being able to enter here. The thousands of burning points piercing his bones had winked out. At the very moment he came within the green man's domain, he was sure.
It's him that winked them out, he thought. The green man. And this place.
Egwene felt it, and Nynaeve, too. The soothing peace, the calm of beauty. He could tell. They wore small, serene smiles and brushed flowers with their fingers, pausing to smell and breathing deep. When the green man noticed, he said,
Flowers are meant to adorn. The plants or humans, it is much the same. None mind, so long as you don't take too many.
And he began plucking one from this plant and one from that. Never more than two from any. Soon Nynaeve and Egwene wore caps of blossoms in their hair, pink wild rose and yellow bell and white morning star. The wisdom's braid seemed a garden of pink and white to her waist. Even Moraine received a pale garland of morning star on her brow, woven so deftly that the flowers still seemed to be growing. Rand was not sure they were not growing. The green man tended his forest garden as he walked, while he talked softly to Moraine,
taking care of whatever needed care without really thinking about it.
His hazelnut eyes caught a crooked limb on a climbing wild rose, forced into an awkward angle by the blossom-covered limb of an apple tree, and he paused, still talking, to run his hand along the bend. Rand was not sure if his eyes were playing tricks or if thorns actually did bend out of the way so as not to prick those green fingers. When the towering shape of the green man moved on, the limb ran straight and true, spreading red petals among the white of apple blossoms. He bent to cup one huge hand around a tiny seed lying on a patch of pebbles, and when he straightened, a small shoot had roots through the rocks to good soil.
"All things must grow where they are, according to the pattern," he explained over his shoulder, as if apologizing. "And face the turning of the wheel. But the Creator will not mind if I give just a little help."
Rand led Red around the chute, careful not to let the bay's hooves crush it. It did not seem right to destroy what the green man had done just to avoid an extra step. Egwene smiled at him, one of her secret smiles, and touched his arm. She was so pretty, with her unbound hair full of flowers, that he smiled back at her until she blushed and lowered her eyes. "I will protect you," he thought. "Whatever else happens, I will see you safe, I swear it." Into the heart of the spring forest the green man took them, to an arched opening in the side of a hill. It was a simple stone arch, tall and white, and on the keystone was a circle halved by a sinuous line, one half rough, the other smooth. The ancient symbol of Aes Sedai. The opening itself was shadowed. For a moment everyone simply looked in silence. Then Moraine removed the garland from her hair and gently hung it on the limb of a sweetberry bush beside the arch. It was as if her movement restored speech.
"It's in there?" Nynaeve asked. "What we've come for?"
"I'd really like to see the Tree of Life," Matt said, not taking his eyes off the halved circle above them.
"We can wait that long, can't we?"
The green man gave Rand an odd look, then shook his head.
"Arvind Dasora is not here. I have not rested beneath its ungentle branches in 2,000 years."
"The Tree of Life is not why we came," Moraine said firmly.
She gestured to the arch.
"In there is."
"I will not go in with you," the green man said.
The butterflies around him swirled as if they shared some agitation.
"I was set to guard it long, long ago, but it makes me uneasy to come too close. I feel myself being unmade. My end is linked with it, somehow. I remember the making of it. Some of the making. Some."
His hazelnut eyes stared, lost in memory, and he fingered his scar.
"It was the first days of the breaking of the world, when the joy of victory over the Dark One turned bitter with the knowledge that all might yet be shattered by the weight of the shadow. 100 of them made it, men and women together. The greatest Aes Sedai works were always done so. Joining Sidine and Sidar, as the true source is joined. They died all to make it pure, while the world was torn around them. Knowing they would die, they charged me to guard it against the need to come. It was not what I was made for, but all was breaking apart, and they were alone, and I was all they had. It was not what I was made for, but I have kept the faith."
He looked down at Moraine, nodding to himself.
"I have kept faith until it was needed, and now it ends."
"You have kept the faith better than most of us who gave you the charge," the Aes Sedai said. "Perhaps it will not come as badly as you fear."
The scarred, leafy head shook slowly from side to side.
"I know an ending when it comes, Aes Sedai. I will find another place to make things grow."
Nut-brown eyes swept sadly over the green forest.
"Another place, perhaps. When you come out, I will see you again, if there is time."
With that, he strode away, trailing butterflies, becoming one with the forest more completely than Lan's cloak ever could.
"What did he mean?"
Matt demanded.
"If there's time."
"Come," Moraine said. And she stepped through the arch. Lan went at her heels. Ran was not sure what he expected when he followed. The hair stirred uneasily on his arms and rose in the back of his neck. But it was only a corridor, its polished walls rounded overhead like the arch, winding gently downward. There was headroom enough and to spare for Loyal. There would have been room enough for the green man. The smooth floor, slick to the eye like oiled slate, yet somehow gave a sure footing. Seamless white walls glittered with uncounted flecks and untold colors, giving a low, soft light even after the sunlit archway vanished around a curve behind. He was sure the light was no natural thing, but he sensed it was benign, too.
"Then why is your skin still crawling?"
Down they went, and down.
"There," Moraine said at last, pointing. "Ahead."
And the corridor opened into a vast, domed space, the rough living rock of its ceiling dotted with clumps of glowing crystals. Below it, a pool took up the entire cavern, except for the walkway around it, perhaps 5 paces wide. In the oval shape of an eye, the pool was lined about its rim with a low, flat edging of crystals that glowed with a duller yet fiercer light than those above. Its surface was as smooth as glass and as clear as the wine spring water. Rand felt as if his eyes could penetrate it forever, but he could not see any bottom to it.
"The eye of the world," Moraine said softly beside him.
As he looked around in wonder, he realized that the long years since the making, 3,000 of them, had worked their way while no one came. Not all the crystals in the dome glowed with the same intensity. Some were stronger, some weaker, some flickered, and others were only faceted lumps to sparkle in a captured light. Had all shone, the dome would have been as bright as noonday, but they made it only late afternoon now. Dust coated the walkway, and bits of stone and even crystal. Long years waiting, while the wheel turned and ground.
"But what is it?" Matt asked uneasily. "That doesn't look like any water I ever saw."
He kicked a lump of dark stone the size of his fist over the edge. The stone struck the glassy surface and slid into the pool without a splash or so much as a ripple. As it sank, the rock began to swell, growing ever larger, larger and more attenuated, a blob the size of his head that Rand could almost see through, a faint blur as wide as his arm was long. Then it was gone. He thought his skin would creep right off his body.
"What is it?"
he demanded, and was shocked at the hoarse harshness of his own voice.
"It might be called the essence of Saidin." The Aes Sedai's words echoed around the dome. "The essence of the male half of the true source, the pure essence of the power wielded by men before the time of madness, the power to mend the seal on the Dark One's prison, or to break it open completely."
"The light shine on us and protect us,"
Nynaeve whispered. Egwene clutched her as if she wanted to hide behind the wisdom. Even Lan stirred uneasily, though there was no surprise in his eyes. Stone thudded into Rand's shoulders, and he realized he had backed as far as the wall, as far from the eye of the world as he could get. He would have pushed himself right through the wall if he could have. Matt, too, was splayed out against the stone, as flat as he could make himself. Perrin was staring at the pool with his axe half-drawn. His eyes shone, yellow and fierce.
"I always wondered," Loyal said uneasily. "When I read about it, I always wondered what it was. Why? Why did they do it? And how?"
"No one living knows."
Moraine no longer looked at the pool. She was watching Rand and his two friends, studying them, her eyes weighing.
"Neither the how, nor more of the why, than that it would be needed one day. And that need would be the greatest and most desperate the world had faced to that time. Perhaps ever would face. Many in Tar Valon have attempted to find a way to use this power, but it is as untouchable for any woman as the moon is for a cat. Only a man could channel it, but the last male Aes Sedai is nearly 3,000 years gone. Yet the need they saw was a desperate one. They worked through the taint of the Dark One on Saidin to make it, and make it pure, knowing that doing so would kill them all. Male Aes Sedai and female together. The green man spoke true. The greatest wonders of the Age of Legends were done in that way. Saidin and Saidar, together. All the women in Tarvalin, all the Aes Sedai in all the courts and cities, even with those in the lands beyond the waste, even counting those who may still live beyond the Arath Ocean, could not fill a spoon with the power, lacking men to work with them.
Rand's throat rasped as if he had been screaming.
Why did you bring us here?
Because you are Taviren.
The Aes Sedai's face was unreadable. Her eyes shimmered and seemed to pull at him.
Because the Dark One's power will strike here, and because it must be confronted and stopped, or the shadow will cover the world. There is no need greater than that. Let us go out into the sunlight again, while there is yet time.
Without waiting to see if they would follow, she started back up the corridor with Lan, who stepped perhaps a bit more quickly than usual for him. Egwene and Nynaeve hurried behind her. Rand edged along the wall. He could not make himself get even one step closer to what the pool was, and scrambled into the corridor in a tangle with Matt and Perrin. He would have run if it had not meant trampling Egwene and Nynaeve, Moraine and Lan. He could not stop shaking even when he was back outside.
I do not like this, Moraine,
Nynaeve said angrily when the sun shone on them again.
I believe the danger is as great as you say, or I would not be here. But this is...
I have found you at last.
Rand jerked as if a rope had tightened around his neck. The words, the voice... For a moment he believed it was Baalzamon. But the two men who walked out of the trees, faces hidden by their cowls, did not wear cloaks the color of dried blood. One cloak was a dark gray, the other almost as dark a green, and they seemed musty even in the open air. And the men were not fades. The breeze stirred their cloaks.
Who are you?
Lan's stance was cautious, his hand on his sword hilt.
How did you come here? If you are seeking the Green Man...
He guided us.
The hand that pointed to Matt was old and shriveled to scarcely human, lacking a fingernail and with knuckles gnarled like knots in a piece of rope. Matt took a step back, eyes widening.
An old thing, an old friend, an old enemy... But he is not the one we seek,
the green-cloaked man finished. The other man stood as if he would never speak. Moraine straightened to her full height, no more than shoulder-high to any man there, but suddenly seeming as tall as the hills. Her voice rang like a bell demanding,
Who are you?
Hands pushed back hoods and Rand goggled. The old man was older than old. He made Sen Bui look like a child in the blossom of health. The skin of his face was like crazed parchment drawn tight over a skull, then pulled tighter still. Wispy tufts of brittle hair stood at odd places on his scabrous scalp. His ears were withered bits like scraps of ancient leather. His eyes sunken, peering out of his head as if from the ends of tunnels. Yet the other was worse. A tight black leather carapace covered that one's head and face completely, but the front of it was worked into a perfect face. A young man's face... Laughing wildly, laughing insanely, frozen forever. What is he hiding if the other shows what he shows? Then even thought froze in his head, shattered to dust, and blew away.
I am called Agenor, the old one said. And he is Balthamel. He no longer speaks with his tongue. The wheel grinds exceedingly fine over 3,000 years imprisoned.
His sunken eyes slid to the arch. Balthamel leaned forward, his mask's eyes on the white stone opening, as if he wanted to go straight in.
So long without, Agenor said softly. So long.
The light protect,
Loyal began, his voice shaking, and cut off abruptly when Agenor looked at him.
The Forsaken, Matt said hoarsely, are bound in Sheol Ghul.
We're bound,
Agenor smiled. His yellowed teeth had the look of fangs.
Some of us are bound no longer. The seals weaken Aes Sedai. Like Ishamael, we walk the world again, and soon the rest of us will come. I was too close to this world in my captivity, I and Balthamel, too close to the grinding of the wheel.
but soon the great Lord of the Dark will be free and give us new flesh, and the world will be ours once more. You will have no Luz Theron Kinslayer this time. No Lord of the Morning to save you. We know the one we seek now, and there is no more need for the rest of you.
Lan's sword sprang from his scabbard, too fast for Rand's eye to follow. Yet the warder hesitated, eyes flickering to Moraine, to Nynaeve. The two women stood well apart. To put himself between either of them and the Forsaken would put him further from the other. Only for a heartbeat the hesitation lasted, but as the warder's feet moved, Aghanor raised his hand. It was a scornful gesture, a flipping of his gnarled fingers as if to shoo away a fly. The warder flew backwards through the air as though a huge fist had caught him. With a dull thud, Lan struck the stone arch, hanging there for an instant before dropping in a flaccid heap, his sword lying near his outstretched hand.
"No!" Nynaeve screamed. "Be still!" Moraine commanded,
but before anyone else could move, the Wisdom's knife had left her belt, and she was running toward the Forsaken, her small blade upraised.
"The light blind you!"
she cried, striking at Aghanor's chest. The other Forsaken moved like a viper. While her blow still fell, Balthamul's leather-cased hand darted out to seize her chin, fingers sinking into one cheek while thumb dug into the other, driving the blood out with their pressure and raising the flesh in pale ridges. A convulsion racked Nynaeve from head to toe, as if she had been cracked like a whip. Her knife dropped uselessly from dangling fingers as Balthamul lifted her by his grip, brought her up to where the leather mask stared into her still-quivering face. Her toes spasmed a foot above the ground. Flowers rained from her hair.
"I have almost forgotten the pleasures of the flesh."
Aghanar's tongue crossed his withered lips, sounding like stone on rough leather.
"But Balthamul remembers much."
The laughter of the mask seemed to grow wilder, and the wail that left Nynaeve burned Rand's ears like despair ripped from her living heart. Suddenly Egwene moved, and Rand saw that she was going to help Nynaeve.
"Egwene, no!"
he shouted. But she did not stop. His hand had gone to his sword at Nynaeve's cry, but now he abandoned it and threw himself at Egwene. He thudded into her before her third step, carrying them both to the ground. Egwene landed under him with a gasp, immediately thrashing to get free. Others were moving too, he realized. Perrin's axe whirled into his hands, and his eyes glowed golden and fierce.
"Wisdom!"
Matt howled, the dagger from Shadar Logoth in his fist.
"No!" Rand called. "You can't fight the Forsaken!"
But they ran past him as if they had not heard, their eyes on Nynaeve and the two Forsaken. Aghanar glanced at them, unconcernedly, and smiled. Rand felt the air stir above him like the crack of a giant's whip. Matt and Perrin, not even halfway to the Forsaken, stopped as if they had run into a wall, bounced back to sprawl on the ground.
"Good," Aghanar said. "A fitting place for you. If you learn to abase yourself properly in worship of us, I might let you live."
Hastily, Rand scrambled to his feet. Perhaps he could not fight the Forsaken, no ordinary human could, but he would not let them believe for a minute that he was groveling before them. He tried to help Egwene up, but she slapped his hands away and stood by herself, angrily brushing off her dress. Matt and Perrin had also stubbornly pushed themselves unsteadily erect.
"You will learn," Aghanar said, "if you want to live. Now that I have found what I need,"
his eyes went to the stone archway,
"I might take the time to teach you."
"This shall not be."
The green man strode out of the trees with a voice like lightning striking an ancient oak.
"You do not belong here."
Aghanar spared him a brief contemptuous glance.
"Begone! Your time is ended. All your kind but you long since dust. Live what life is left you and be glad you are beneath our notice."
"This is my place,"
the green man said,
"and you shall hurt no living thing here."
Balthamul tossed Nynaeve aside like a rag, and like a crumpled rag she fell, eyes staring, limp as if all her bones had melted. One leather-clad hand lifted, and the green man roared as smoke rose from the vines that wove him. The wind in the trees echoed his pain. Aghanar turned back to Rand and the others as if the green man had been dealt with. But one long stride and massive leafy arms wrapped themselves around Balthamul, raising him high, crushing him against a chest of thick creepers, black leather mask laughing into hazelnut eyes dark with anger. Like serpents, Balthamel's arms writhed free, his gloved hands grasping the green man's head as though he would wrench it off. Flame shot up where those hands touched, vines withering, leaves falling. The green man bellowed as thick, dark smoke poured out between the vines of his body. On and on he roared, as if all of him were coming out of his mouth with the smoke that billowed between his lips. Suddenly, Balthamel jerked in the green man's grasp. The Forsaken's hands tried to push him away instead of clutching him. One gloved hand flung wide, and a tiny creeper burst through the black leather. A fungus, such as rings trees in the deep shadows of the forest, ringed his arm, sprang from nowhere to full grown, swelling to cover the length of it. Balthamel thrashed, and a shoot of stinkweed ripped open his carapace. Lichens dug in their roots and split tiny cracks across the leather of his face. Nettles broke the eyes of his mask. Death's head mushrooms tore open the mouth. The green man threw the Forsaken down. Balthamel twisted and jerked as all the things that grew in the dark places, all the things with spores, all the things that loved the dank, swelled and grew, tore cloth and leather and flesh. Was it flesh, seen in that brief moment of verdant rage? To tattered shreds, and covered him until only a mound remained, indistinguishable from many in the shaded depths of the green forest, and the mound moved no more than they. With a groan like a limb breaking under too great a weight, the green man crashed to the ground. Half his head was charred black. Tendrils of smoke still rose from him, like gray creepers. Burned leaves fell from his arm as he painfully stretched out his blackened hand to gently cup an acorn. The earth rumbled as an oak seedling pushed up between his fingers. The green man's head fell, but the seedling reached for the sun, straining. Roots shot out and thickened, delved beneath the ground and rose again, thickened more as they sank. The trunk broadened and stretched upward, bark turning gray and fissured and ancient. Limbs spread and grew heavy, as big as arms, as big as men, and lifted to caress the sky, thick with green leaves, dense with acorns. The massive web of roots turned the earth like plows as it spread. The already huge trunk shivered, grew wider, round as a house. Stillness came, and an oak that could have stood 500 years covered the spot where the green man had been, marking the tomb of a legend. Nynaeve lay on the gnarled roots, grown curved to her shape, to make a bed for her to rest upon. The wind sighed through the oak's branches. It seemed to murmur farewell. Even Agenor seemed stunned. Then his head lifted, cavernous eyes burning with hate.
"Enough! It is past time to end this."
"Yes, Forsaken," Moraine said, her voice as cold as deep winter ice. "Past time." The Aes Sedai's hand rose, and the ground fell away beneath Agenor's feet. Flame roared from the chasm, whipped to a frenzy by wind howling in from every direction, sucking a maelstrom of leaves into the fire, which seemed to solidify into a red-streaked yellow jelly of pure heat. In the middle of it, Agenor stood, his feet supported only by air. The Forsaken looked startled, but then he smiled and took a step forward. It was a slow step, as if the fire tried to root him to the spot, but he took it, and then another. "Run!" Moraine commanded. Her face was white with strain.
"All of you, run!"
Agenor stepped across the air, toward the edge of the flames. Rand was aware of others moving, Matt and Perrin dashing away at the edge of his vision, Loyal's long legs carrying him into the trees. But all he could really see was Egwene. She stood there rigid, face pale and eyes closed. It was not fear that held her, he realized. She was trying to throw her puny, untrained wielding of the power against the Forsaken. Roughly he grabbed her arm and pulled her around to face him.
"Run!"
he shouted at her. Her eyes opened, staring at him, angry with him for interfering, liquid with hate for Agenor, with fear of the Forsaken.
"Run!"
he said, pushing her toward the trees, hard enough to start her.
"Run!"
Once started, she did run. But Agenor's withered face turned toward him, toward the running Egwene behind him, as the Forsaken walked through the flames, as if what the Aes Sedai was doing did not concern Agenor at all. Toward Egwene.
"Not her!" Rand shouted. "The light burn you, not her!"
He snatched up a rock and threw it, meaning to draw Agenor's attention. Halfway to the Forsaken's face, the stone turned to a handful of dust.
He hesitated only a moment, long enough to glance over his shoulder and see that Egwene was hidden in the trees. The flames still surrounded Aghanor, patches of his cloak smoldering. But he walked as if he had all the time in the world, and the fire's rim was near. Rand turned and ran. Behind him, he heard Moraine begin to scream.
Chapter 51 Against the Shadow. The land tended upward the way Rand went, but fear lent his legs strength, and they ate ground in long strides, tearing his way through flowering bushes and tangles of wild rose, scattering petals, not caring if thorns ripped his clothes or even his flesh. Moraine had stopped screaming. It seemed as if the shrieks had gone on forever, each one more throat-wrenching than the last. But he knew they had lasted only moments altogether. Moments before Aghanor would be on his trail. He knew it would be him that Aghanor followed. He had seen the certainty in the Forsaken's hollow eyes, in that last second before terror whipped his feet to run. The land grew ever steeper, but he scrambled on, pulling himself forward by handfuls of undergrowth, rocks and dirt and leaves spilling down the slope from under his feet, finally crawling on hands and knees when the slant became too great. Ahead, above, it leveled out a little. Panting, he scrabbled his way the last few spans, got to his feet, and stopped, wanting to howl aloud. 10 paces in front of him, the hilltop dropped away sharply. He knew what he would see before he reached it, but he took the steps anyway, each heavier than the one before, hoping there might be some track, a goat path, anything. At the edge he looked down a sheer 100-foot drop, a stone wall as smooth as planed timber. There has to be some way. I'll go back and find a way around. Go back and— When he turned, Aghanor was there, just reaching the crest. The Forsaken topped the hill without any difficulty, walking up the steep slope as if it were level ground. Deep-sunken eyes burned at him from that drawn parchment face. Somehow it seemed less withered than before, more fleshed, as if Aghanor had fed well on something. Those eyes were fixed on him, yet when Aghanor spoke, it was almost to himself. Baal Zaman will give rewards beyond mortal dreaming for the one who brings you to Sheol Ghul. Yet my dreams have always been beyond those of other men, and I left mortality behind millennia ago. What difference if you serve the great Lord of the Dark alive or dead? None to the spread of the shadow. Why should I share power with you? Why should I bend knee to you? I, who faced Luz Theron Telamon in the Hall of the Servants itself. I, who threw my might against the Lord of the Morning and met him stroke for stroke. I think not. Rand's mouth dried like dust. His tongue felt as shriveled as Aghanor. The edge of the precipice grated under his heels, stone falling away. He did not dare look back, but he heard the rocks bounding and rebounding from the sheer wall, just as his body would if he moved another inch. It was the first he knew that he had been backing up, away from the Forsaken. His skin crawled until he thought he must see it writhing if he looked, if he could only take his eyes off the Forsaken. There has to be some way to get away from him, some way to escape. There has to be. Some way. Suddenly, he felt something. Saw it, though he knew it was not there to see. A glowing rope ran off from Aghanor, behind him, white like sunlight, seen through the purest cloud, heavier than a blacksmith's arm, lighter than air, connecting the Forsaken to something distant beyond knowing, something within the touch of Rand's hand. The rope pulsed, and with every throb Aghanor grew stronger, more fully fleshed, a man as tall and strong as himself. A man harder than the warder, more deadly than the blight. Yet beside that shining cord, the Forsaken seemed almost not to exist. The cord was all. It hummed. It sang. It called Rand's soul. One bright finger strand lifted away, drifted, touched him. And he gasped. Light filled him, and heat that should have burned, yet only warmed, as if it took the chill of the grave from his bones. The strand thickened. I have to get away.
No! Aghanor shouted. You shall not have it! It is mine!
Rand did not move, and neither did the Forsaken, yet they fought as surely as if they grappled in the dust.
Sweat beaded on Agenor's face, no longer withered, no longer old, that of a strong man in his prime. Rand pulsed with the beating in the cord, like the heartbeat of the world. It filled his being. Light filled his mind, till only a corner was left for what was himself. He wrapped the void around that nook, sheltered in emptiness.
Away!
Mine! Agenor cried. Mine!
Warmth built in Rand, the warmth of the sun, the radiance of the sun, bursting, the awful radiance of light, of the light.
Away!
Mine!
Flame shot from Agenor's mouth, broke through his eyes like spears of fire, and he screamed.
Away!
And Rand was no longer on the hilltop. He quivered with the light that suffused him. His mind would not work. Light and heat blinded it.
The light.
In the midst of the void, the light blinded his mind, stunned him with awe. He stood in a broad mountain pass surrounded by jagged black peaks like the teeth of the Dark One. It was real. He was there. He felt the rocks under his boots, the icy breeze on his face. Battle surrounded him, or the tail end of battle. Armored men on armored horses, shining steel, dusty now, slashed and stabbed at snarling Trollocs, wielding spiked axes and scythe-like swords. Some men fought afoot, their horses down, and barded horses galloped through the fight with empty saddles. Fades moved among them all, night-black cloaks hanging still however their dark mounts galloped, and wherever their light-eating swords swung, men died. Sound beat at Rand, beat at him and bounced from the strangeness that had him by the throat. The clash of steel against steel, the panting and grunting of men and Trollocs striving, the screams of men and Trollocs dying. Over the din, banners waved in dust-filled air. The Black Hawk of Faldara, the White Heart of Shinar, others. And Trolloc banners. In just a little space around him he saw the horn skull of the Davol, the blood-red trident of the Kobol, the iron fist of the Daimon. Yet it was indeed the tail end of battle, a pausing, as humans and Trollocs alike fell back to regroup. None seemed to notice Rand as they paid a few last strokes and broke away, galloping, or running in a stagger to the ends of the pass. Rand found himself facing the end of the pass where the humans were reforming, pennants stirring beneath gleaming lance points. Wounded men wavered in their saddles, riderless horses reared and galloped. Plainly they could not stand another meeting, yet just as plainly they readied themselves for one final charge. Some of them saw him now. Men stood in their stirrups to point at him. Their shouts came to him as tiny piping. Staggering, he turned. The forces of the Dark One filled the other end of the pass. Bristling black pikes and spear points swelling up onto mountain slopes made blacker still by the great mass of Trollocs that dwarfed the army of Shinar. Fades in hundreds rode across the front of the horde, the fierce, muzzled faces of Trollocs turning away in fear as they passed. Huge bodies pulling back to make way. Overhead, Dregkar wheeled on leathery pinions, shrieks challenging the wind. Halfmen saw him now too, pointed, and Dregkar spun and dove. Two, three, six of them, crying shrilly as they plummeted toward him. He stared at them. Heat filled him. The burning heat of the touched sun. He could see the Dregkar clearly, soulless eyes in pale men's faces on winged bodies that had nothing of humanity about them. Terrible heat, crackling heat. From the clear sky, lightning came. Each bolt crisp and sharp, searing his eyes, each bolt striking a winged black shape. Hunting cries became shrieks of death, and charred forms fell to leave the sky clean again. The heat. The terrible heat of the light. He fell to his knees. He thought he could hear his tears sizzling on his cheeks.
No!
He clutched at tufts of wiry grass for some hold on reality. The grass burst in flame.
Please, no!
The wind rose with his voice, howled with his voice, roared with his voice down the pass, whipping the flames to a wall of fire that sped away from him and toward the Trolloc host faster than a horse could run. Fire burned into the Trollocs, and the mountains trembled with their screams, screams almost as loud as the wind and his voice.
It has to end!
He beat at the ground with his fist, and the earth tolled like a gong.
He bruised his hands on stony soil, and the earth trembled. Ripples ran through the ground ahead of him in ever-rising waves. Waves of dirt and rock towering over Trollocs and Fades, breaking over them as the mountains shattered under their hooved feet. A boiling mass of flesh and rubble churned across the Trolloc army. What was left standing was still a mighty host, but now no more than twice the human army in numbers, and milling in fright and confusion. The wind died. The screams died. The earth was still. Dust and smoke swirled back down the pass to surround him.
The light blinds you, Balzamon! This has to end!
It is not here. It was not Rand's thought, making his skull vibrate.
I will take no part. Only the Chosen One can do what must be done, if he will.
Where?
He did not want to say it, but he could not stop himself.
Where?
The haze surrounding him parted, leaving a dome of clear, clean air 10 spans high, walled by billowing smoke and dust. Steps rose before him, each standing alone and unsupported, stretching up into the murk that obscured the sun.
Not here.
Through the mist, as from the far end of the earth, came a cry.
The light wills it!
The ground rumbled with the thunder of hooves as the forces of humankind launched their last charge. Within the void, his mind knew a moment of panic. The charging horsemen could not see him in the dust. Their charge would trample right over him. The greater part of him ignored the shaking ground as a petty thing beneath concern. Dull anger driving his feet, he mounted the first steps.
It has to be ended.
Darkness surrounded him. The utter blackness of total nothing. The steps were still there, hanging in the black, under his feet and ahead. When he looked back, those behind were gone, faded away to nothing, into the nothingness around him. But the cord was yet there, stretching behind him, the glowing line dwindling and vanishing into the distance. It was not so thick as before, but it still pulsed, pumping strength into him, pumping life, filling him with the light. He climbed. It seemed forever that he climbed. Forever and minutes. Time stood still in nothingness. Time ran faster. He climbed until suddenly a door stood before him, its surface rough and splintered and old. A door well remembered. He touched it, and it burst to fragments. While they still fell, he stepped through, bits of shattered wood falling from his shoulders. The chamber, too, was as he remembered, the mad striated sky beyond the balcony, the melted walls, the polished table, the terrible fireplace with its roaring, heatless flames. Some of those faces that made the fireplace, writhing in torment, shrieking in silence, tugged at his memory as if he knew them. But he held the void close, floated within himself in emptiness. He was alone. When he looked at the mirror on the wall, his face was there as clear as if it was him.
There is calm in the void.
Yes, Balzamon said from in front of the fireplace. I thought Agana's greed would overcome him. But it makes no difference in the end. A long search, but ended now. You are here, and I know you.
In the midst of the light, the void drifted, and in the midst of the void floated Rand. He reached for the soil of his home and felt hard rock, unyielding and dry, stone without pity, where only the strong could survive, only those as hard as the mountains.
I am tired of running.
He could not believe his voice was so calm.
Tired of you threatening my friends. I will run no more.
Balzamon had a cord, too, he saw. A black cord, thicker by far than his own, so wide it should have dwarfed the human body, yet dwarfed by Balzamon instead. Each pulse along that black vein ate light.
You think it makes any difference whether you run or stay?
The flames of Balzamon's mouth laughed. The faces in the hearth wept at their master's mirth.
You have fled from me many times, and each time I run you down and make you eat your pride with sniveling tears for spice. Many times you have stood and fought, then groveled in defeat, begging mercy. You have this choice, worm, and this choice only. Kneel at my feet and serve me well, and I will give you power above thrones.
or be Tarvalin's puppet fool and scream while you are ground into the dust of time.
Rand shifted, glancing back through the door as if seeking a way to escape. Let the Dark One think that. Beyond the doorway was still the black of nothing, split by the shining thread that ran from his body. And out there, Baalzamun's heavier cord ran as well, so black that it stood out in the dark as if against snow. The two cords beat like heart veins in counter time, each against other, the light barely resisting the waves of dark.
There are other choices, Rand said. The wheel weaves the pattern, not you. Every trap you've laid for me I have escaped. I've escaped your Fades and Trollocs, escaped your Dark Friends. I tracked you here and destroyed your army on the way. You do not weave the pattern.
Baalzamun's eyes roared like two furnaces. His lips did not move, but Rand thought he heard a curse screamed at Agenar. Then the fires died, and that ordinary human face smiled at him in a way that chilled even through the warmth of the light.
Other armies can be raised, fool. Armies you have not dreamed of will yet come. And you tracked me, you slug under a rock. Track me! I began the setting of your path the day you were born, a path to lead you to your grave or here. Aiel allowed to flee, and one to live, to speak the words that would echo down the years. Jaehn Farstrider, a hero, he twisted the word to a sneer, whom I painted like a fool and sent to the Ogier thinking he was free of me. The Black Aja, wriggling like worms on their bellies across the world to search you out. I pull the strings, and the Amalyn Seat dances and thinks she controls events.
The void trembled. Hastily Rand firmed it again.
He knows it all. He could have done. It could be the way he says.
The light warmed the void. Doubt cried out and was stilled, till only the seed remained. He struggled, not knowing whether he wanted to bury the seed or make it grow. The void steadied, smaller than before, and he floated in calm. Baalzamun seemed to notice nothing.
It matters little if I have you alive or dead, except to you, and to what power you might have. You will serve me, or your soul will. But I would rather have you kneel to me alive than dead. A single fist of Trolloc sent to your village when I could have sent 1,000. One Dark Friend to face you, where 100 could have come on you asleep. And you, fool, you don't even know them all. Neither those ahead, nor those behind, nor those by your side. You are mine, have always been mine, my dog on a leash. And I brought you here to kneel to your master or die, and let your soul kneel.
I deny you. You have no power over me, and I will not kneel to you alive or dead.
Look!
Baalzamun said.
Look!
Unwilling, Rand yet turned his head. Egwene stood there, and Nynaeve, pale and frightened, with flowers in their hair. And another woman, little older than the Wisdom, dark-eyed and beautiful, clothed in a Two Rivers dress, bright blossoms embroidered round the neck.
Mother?
He breathed, and she smiled, a hopeless smile. His mother's smile.
No, my mother is dead, and the other two are safe away from here. I deny you!
Egwene and Nynaeve blurred, became wafting mist, dissipated. Kariel Thor still stood there, her eyes big with fear.
She, at least, Baalzamun said, is mine to do with as I will.
Rand shook his head.
I deny you.
He had to force the words out.
She is dead and safe from you in the light.
His mother's lips trembled. Tears trickled down her cheeks. Each one burned him like acid.
The Lord of the Grave is stronger than he once was, my son, she said. His reach is longer. The Father of Lies has a honeyed tongue for unwary souls. My son, my only darling son, I would spare you if I could, but he is my master now. His whim, the law of my existence. I can but obey him and grovel for his favor. Only you can free me. Please, my son, please help me. Help me. Help me. Please.
The wail ripped out of her as barefaced fades, pale and eyeless, closed round. Her clothes ripped away in their bloodless hands, hands that wielded pincers and clamps and things that stung and burned and whipped against her naked flesh. Her scream would not end. Rand's scream echoed hers. The void boiled in his mind. His sword was in his hand. Not the Heronmark blade, but a blade of light. A blade of the light. Even as he raised it, a fiery white bolt shot from the point as if the blade itself had reached out. It touched the nearest fade, and the blinding incandescence filled the chamber, shining through the half-men like a candle through paper, burning through them, blinding his eyes to the scene. From the midst of the brilliance, he heard a whisper.
"Thank you, my son. The light. The blessed light."
The flash faded, and he was alone in the chamber with Baalzamon. Baalzamon's eyes burned like the pit of doom, but he shied back from the sword as if it truly were the light itself.
"Fool! You will destroy yourself. You cannot wield it so. Not yet. Not until I teach you."
"It is ended," Rand said, and he swung the sword at Balzamon's black cord. Balzamon screamed as the sword fell, screamed till the stone walls trembled, and the endless howl redoubled as the blade of light severed the cord. The cut ends rebounded apart as if they had been under tension. The end stretching into the nothingness outside began to shrivel as it sprang away. The other whipped back into Balzamon, hurling him against the fireplace. There was silent laughter in the soundless shrieks of the tortured faces. The walls shivered and cracked. The floor heaved, and chunks of stone crashed to the floor from the ceiling. As all broke apart around him, Rand pointed the sword at Balzamon's heart.
"It is ended!"
Light lanced from the blade, coruscating in a shower of fiery sparks like droplets of molten white metal. Wailing, Balzamon threw up his arms in a vain effort to shield himself. Flames shrieked in his eyes, joining with other flames as the stone ignited. The stone of the cracking walls, the stone of the pitching floor, the stone showering from the ceiling. Rand felt the bright thread attached to him thinning, till only the glow itself remained, but he strained harder, not knowing what he did or how, only that this had to be ended. It has to be ended. Fire filled the chamber, a solid flame. He could see Balzamon withering like a leaf, hear him howling, feel the shrieks grating on his bones. The flame became pure white light, brighter than the sun. Then the last flicker of the thread was gone, and he was falling through endless black and Balzamon's fading howl. Something struck him with tremendous force, turning him to jelly, and the jelly shook and screamed from the fire raging inside. The hungry cold burning without end. Chapter 52. There is neither beginning nor end. He became aware of the sun first, moving across a cloudless sky, filling his unblinking eyes. It seemed to go by fits and starts, standing still for days, then darting ahead in a streak of light, jerking toward the far horizon, day falling with it. Light. That should mean something. Thought was a new thing. I can think. I means me. Pain came next, the memory of raging fever. The bruises where shaking chills had thrown him around like a rag doll. And a stink, a greasy, burned smell filling his nostrils and his head. With aching muscles, he heaved himself over, pushed up to hands and knees. Uncomprehending, he stared at the oily ashes in which he had been lying, ashes scattered and smeared over the stone of the hilltop. Bits of dark green cloth lay mixed in the char, edge-blackened scraps that had escaped the flames. Agenor. His stomach heaved and twisted. Trying to brush black streaks of ash from his clothes, he lurched away from the remains of the Forsaken. His hands flapped freely, not making much headway. He tried to use both hands and fell forward. A sheer drop loomed under his face, a smooth rock wall spinning in his eyes, depth pulling him. His head swam, and he vomited over the edge of the cliff. Trembling, he crawled backwards on his belly until there was solid stone under his eyes, then flopped over onto his back, panting for breath. With an effort, he fumbled his sword from its scabbard. Only a few ashes remained from the red cloth. His hands shook when he held it up in front of his face. It took both hands. It was a Heronmark blade.
Heronmark?
Yes. Tam, my father. But only steel for that. He needed 3 wavering tries to sheath it again. It had been something else. Or there was another sword. My name, he said after a while, is Randall Thor. More memory crashed back into his head like a lead ball, and he groaned.
The Dark One, he whispered to himself. The Dark One is dead.
There was no more need for caution.
Shaitan is dead.
The world seemed to lurch. He shook in silent mirth until tears poured from his eyes.
Shaitan is dead!
He laughed at the sky. Other memories.
Egwene!
That name meant something important. Painfully, he got to his feet, wavering like a willow in a high wind, and staggered past Agenor's ashes without looking at them. Not important anymore. He fell more than climbed down that first steep part of the slope, tumbling and sliding from bush to bush. By the time he reached more level ground, his bruises ached twice as much, but he found strength enough to stand, barely.
Egwene.
He broke into a shambling run. Leaves and flower petals showered around him as he blundered through the undergrowth.
Have to find her. Who is she?
His arms and legs seemed to flail about more like long blades of grass than go as he wanted them to. Tottering, he fell against a tree, slamming against the trunk so hard that he grunted. Foliage rained on his head while he pressed his face to the rough bark, clutching to keep from falling.
Egwene.
He pushed himself away from the tree and hurried on. Almost immediately he tilted again, falling, but he forced his legs to work faster, to run into the fall so that he was staggering along at a good clip, all the while one step from falling flat on his face. Moving made his legs begin to obey him more. Slowly he found himself running upright, arms pumping, long legs pulling him down the slope in leaps. He bounded into the clearing, half-filled now by the great oak marking the green man's grave. There was the white stone arch marked with the ancient symbol of the Aes Sedai, and the blackened, gaping pit where fire and wind had tried to trap Agenor and failed.
Egwene! Egwene, where are you?
A pretty girl looked up with big eyes from where she knelt beneath the spreading branches, flowers in her hair, and brown oak leaves. She was slender and young and frightened.
Yes, that's who she is, of course. Egwene, thank the light you're all right.
There were 2 other women with her, one with haunted eyes and a long braid, still decorated with a few white morning stars. The other lay outstretched, her head pillowed on folded cloaks, her own sky-blue cloak not quite hiding her tattered dress. Charred spots and tears in the rich cloth showed, and her face was pale, but her eyes were open.
Moraine. Yes, the Aes Sedai. And the wisdom Nynaeve.
All 3 women looked at him, unblinking and intent.
You are all right, aren't you, Egwene? He didn't harm you.
He could walk without stumbling now. The sight of her made him feel like dancing, bruises and all. But it still felt good to drop down cross-legged beside them.
I never even saw him after you pushed.
Her eyes were uncertain on his face.
What about you, Rand?
I'm fine, he laughed. He touched her cheek and wondered if he had imagined a slight pulling away.
A little rest and I'll be new made. Nynaeve? Moraine Sedai?
The names felt new in his mouth. The wisdom's eyes were old, ancient in her young face, but she shook her head.
A little bruised, she said, still watching him. Moraine is the only one of us who was really hurt. I suffered more injury to my pride than anything else, the Aes Sedai said irritably, plucking at her cloak blanket.
She looked as if she had been a long time ill, or hard used, but despite the dark circles under them, her eyes were sharp and full of power.
Agenor was surprised and angry that I held him as long as I did, but fortunately he had no time to spare for me. I am surprised myself that I held him so long. In the Age of Legends, Agenor was close behind the Kinslayer and Ishamael in power. The Dark One and all the Forsaken, Egwene quoted in a faint, unsteady voice, are bound in Shael Ghul, bound by the Creator.
She drew a shuddering breath.
Agenor and Balthamo must have been trapped near the surface.
Moraine sounded as if she had already explained this, impatient at doing so again.
The patch on the Dark One's prison weakened enough to free them. Let us be thankful no more of the Forsaken were freed. If they had been, we would have seen them.
It doesn't matter, Rand said. Agenor and Balthamel are dead, and so is Shai...
The Dark One,
the Aes Sedai cut him off. Ill or not, her voice was firm and her dark eyes commanding.
Best we still call him the Dark One, or Baalzamon at least.
He shrugged.
As you wish, but he's dead. The Dark One's dead. I killed him. I burned him with...
The rest of memory flooded back then, leaving his mouth hanging open.
The One Power. I wielded the One Power. No man can...
He licked lips that were suddenly dry. A gust of wind swirled falling and falling leaves around them, but it was no colder than his heart. They were looking at him, the three of them, watching, not even blinking. He reached out to Egwene, and there was no imagination in her drawing back this time.
Egwene?
She turned her face away, and he let his hand drop. Abruptly, she flung her arms around him, burying her face in his chest.
I'm sorry, Rand. I'm sorry. I don't care. Truly, I don't.
Her shoulders shook. He thought she was crying. Awkwardly patting her hair, he looked at the other two women over the top of her head.
The wheel weaves as the wheel wills, Nynaeve said slowly. But you are still Randall Thor of Emmons Field.
But the light help me. The light help us all. You are too dangerous, Rand.
He flinched from the wisdom's eyes, sad, regretting, and already accepting loss.
What happened? Moraine said. Tell me everything.
And with her eyes on him, compelling, he did. He wanted to turn away, to make it short, leave things out, but the Aes Sedai's eyes drew everything from him. Tears ran down his face when he came to Kariel Thor, his mother. He emphasized that.
He had my mother. My mother!
There was sympathy and pain in Nynaeve's face, but the Aes Sedai's eyes drove him on, to the Sword of Light, to severing the black cord and the flames consuming Baalzamon. Egwene's arms tightened around him, as if she would pull him back from what had happened.
But it wasn't me, he finished. The light pulled me along. It wasn't really me. Doesn't that make any difference?
I had suspicions from the first, Moraine said. Suspicions are not proof, though. After I gave you the token, the coin, and made that bonding, you should have been willing to fall in with whatever I wanted. But you resisted, questioned. That told me something, but not enough. Manetheran blood was always stubborn, and more so after Aemon died, and Eldraine's heart was shattered. Then there was Bella.
Bella, he said.
Nothing makes any difference. The Aes Sedai nodded. At Watch Hill, Bella had no need of me to cleanse her of tiredness. Someone had already done it. She could have outrun Mondarb that night. I should have thought of who Bella carried. With Trollocs on our heels, a drag car overhead, and a half-man the light alone knew where, how you must have feared that Egwene would be left behind. You needed something more than you had ever needed anything before in your life. And you reached out to the one thing that could give it to you. Sidine. He shivered. He felt so cold his fingers hurt.
If I never do it again, if I never touch it again, I won't...
He couldn't say it. Go mad. Turn the land and people around him to madness. Die, rotting while he still lived.
Perhaps, Moraine said. It would be much easier if there was someone to teach you... But it might be done, with a supreme effort of will. You can teach me. Surely you...
He stopped when the Aes Sedai shook her head.
Can a cat teach a dog to climb trees, Rand? Can a fish teach a bird to swim? I know Sidar, but I can teach you nothing of Sidine. Those who could are 3,000 years dead. Perhaps you are stubborn enough, though. Perhaps your will is strong enough.
Egwene straightened, wiping reddened eyes with the back of her hand. She looked as if she wanted to say something, but when her mouth opened, nothing came out.
At least she isn't pulling away.
At least she can look at me without screaming. The others, he said. Lan took them into the cavern, Nynaeve said. The eye is gone, but there's something in the middle of the pool. A crystal column, and steps to reach it. Matt and Perrin wanted to look for you first. Loyal did, too. But Moraine said... She glanced at the Aes Sedai, troubled. Moraine returned her look calmly. She said we mustn't disturb you while you were... His throat constricted until he could hardly breathe. Will they turn their faces the way Egwene did? Will they scream and run away like I'm a fade? Moraine spoke as if she did not notice the blood draining from his face. There was a vast amount of the one power in the eye. Even in the Age of Legends, few could have channeled so much unaided without being destroyed. Very few.
You told them?
He said hoarsely. If everybody knows... Only Lan, Moraine said gently. He must know. And Nynaeve and Egwene, for what they are and what they will become. The others have no need yet.
Why not?
The rasp in his throat made his voice harsh.
You will be wanting to gentle me, won't you? Isn't that what I said I'd do to men who can wield the one power? Change them so they can't? Make them safe? Tom said men who have been gentled die because they stop wanting to live. Why aren't you talking about taking me to Tarvalen to be gentled?
You are Tavirin, Moraine replied. Perhaps the pattern has not finished with you. Rand sat up straight. In the dreams, Baalzamon said Tarvalen and the Amaralin seat would try to use me. He named names, and I remember them now. Raoul and Darkspain, and Guer Amalasan. Yuri and Stonebow. Davian. Loghain. The last was the hardest of all to say. Nynaeve went pale, and Egwene gasped, but he pressed on angrily.
Every one a false dragon. Don't try to deny it. Well, I won't be used. I am not a tool you can throw on the midden heap when it's worn out.
A tool made for a purpose is not demeaned by being used for that purpose, Moraine's voice was as harsh as his own, but a man who believes the father of lies demeans himself. You say you will not be used, and then you let the Dark One set your path like a hound sent after a rabbit by his master. His fists clenched, and he turned his head away. It was too close to the things Baalzamon had said.
I am no one's hound. Do you hear me? No one's!
Loyal and the others appeared in the arch, and Rand scrambled to his feet, looking at Moraine. They will not know, the Aes Sedai said, until the pattern makes it so. Then his friends were coming close. Lan led the way, looking as hard as ever, but still somewhat the worse for wear. He had one of Nynaeve's bandages around his temples and a stiff-backed way of walking. Behind him, Loyal carried a large gold chest, ornately worked and chased with silver. No one but an ogre could have lifted it unaided. Perrin had his arms wrapped around a big bundle of folded white cloth, and Matt was cupping what appeared to be fragments of pottery in his two hands.
So, you're alive after all, Matt laughed.
His face darkened, and he jerked his head at Moraine.
She wouldn't let us look for you. Said we had to find out what the eye was hiding. I'd have gone anyway, but Nynaeve and Egwene sided with her and almost threw me through the arch.
You're here now, Perrin said. And not too badly beaten about by the look of you.
His eyes did not glow, but the irises were all yellow now.
That's the important thing. You're here, and we're done with what we came for, whatever it was.
Moraine Sedai says we're done, and we can go.
Home, Rand. The light burned me, but I want to go home.
Good to see you alive, sheepherder, Lan said gruffly. I see you hung on to your sword. Maybe you'll learn to use it now.
Rand felt a sudden burst of affection for the warder. Lan knew, but on the surface at least, nothing had changed. He thought that perhaps for Lan, nothing had changed inside either.
Oh, I must say, Loyal said, setting the chest down, that traveling with Tavirin has turned out to be even more interesting than I expected.
His ears twitched violently.
If it becomes any more interesting, I will go back to the Steading Shangtai immediately, confess everything to Elder Haman, and never leave my books again.
Suddenly the Ogier grinned, that wide mouth splitting his face in two.
It is so good to see you, Randall Thor. The warder is the only one of these three who cares much at all for books, and he won't talk. What happened to you? We all ran off and hid in the woods until Moraine Sedai sent Lan to find us, but she would not let us look for you. Why were you gone so long, Rand?
I ran and ran, he said slowly, until I fell down a hill and hit my head on a rock. I think I hit every rock on the way down. That should explain his bruises. He tried to watch the Aes Sedai, and Nynaeve and Egwene, too, but their faces never changed. When I came to, I was lost, and finally I stumbled back here. I think Aghanor is dead. Burned. I found some ashes and pieces of his cloak. The lies sounded hollow in his ears. He could not understand why they did not laugh with scorn and demand the truth, but his friends nodded, accepting, and made sympathetic sounds as they gathered around the Aes Sedai to show her what they had found.
Help me up,
Moraine said. Nynaeve and Egwene lifted her until she was sitting. They had to support her even then.
How could these things be inside the eye, Matt asked, without being destroyed like that rock?
They were not put there to be destroyed, the Aes Sedai said curtly, and frowned away their questions while she took the pottery fragments, black and white and shiny, from Matt. They seemed like rubble to Rand, but she fitted them together deftly on the ground beside her, making a perfect circle the size of a man's hand. The ancient symbol of the Aes Sedai, the flame of Tar-Valon, joined with the dragon's fang, black, siding white. For a moment, Egwene only looked at it, her face unreadable. Then she took the knife from her belt and handed it to Lan, nodding to the circle. The warder separated out the largest piece, then raised the knife high and brought it down with all his might. A spark flew, the fragment leaped with the force of the blow, and the blade snapped with a sharp crack. He examined the stump, left attached to the hilt, then tossed it aside. "The best steel from Tyr," he said dryly. Matt snatched the fragment up and grunted, then showed it around. There was no mark on it.
"Quendiar," Moraine said. "Heartstone. No one has been able to make it since the Age of Legends, and even then it was made only for the greatest purpose. Once made, nothing can break it. Not the one power itself wielded by the greatest Aes Sedai who ever lived, aided by the most powerful Saangreal ever made. Any power directed against Heartstone only makes it stronger." "Then how?"
Matt's gesture with the piece he held took in the other bits on the ground.
"This was one of the seven seals in the Dark One's prison," Moraine said.
Matt dropped the piece as if it had become white hot. For a moment, Perrin's eyes seemed to glow again. The Aes Sedai calmly began gathering the fragments.
"It doesn't matter anymore," Rand said.
His friends looked at him oddly, and he wished he had kept his mouth shut.
"Of course,"
Moraine replied, but she carefully put all the pieces into her pouch.
"Bring me the chest."
Loyal lifted it closer. The flattened cube of gold and silver appeared to be solid, but the Aes Sedai's fingers felt across the intricate work, pressing, and with a sudden click, a top flung back as if on springs. A curled gold horn nestled within. Despite its gleam, it seemed plain beside the chest that held it. The only markings were a line of silver script inlaid around the mouth of the bell. Moraine lifted the horn out, as if lifting a babe.
"This must be carried to Ilion," she said softly.
"Ilion," Perrin growled. "That's almost to the Sea of Storms, nearly as far south of home as we are north now."
"Is it?"
Loyal stopped to catch his breath.
"Can it be?"
"You can read the old tongue?" Moraine asked,
and when he nodded, she handed him the horn. The Ogier took it as gently as she had, delicately tracing the script with one broad finger. His eyes went wider and wider, and his ears stood up straight.
"Tiarmi Arvin, Moradin, Isainda Vaden," he whispered. "The grave is no bar to my call." "The Horn of Valir."
For once the warder appeared truly shaken. There was a touch of awe in his voice. At the same time, Nynaeve said in a shaky voice,
"To call the heroes of the ages back from the dead to fight the Dark One."
"Burn me," Matt breathed.
Loyal reverently laid the horn back in its golden nest.
I begin to wonder, Moraine said. The eye of the world was made against the greatest need the world would ever face. But was it made for the use to which we put it? Or to guard these things? Quickly, the last, show it to me. After the first two, Rand could understand Perrin's reluctance. Lan and the Ogier took the bundle of white cloth from him when he hesitated, and unfolded it between them. A long white banner spread out, lifting on the air. Rand could only stare. The whole thing seemed of a piece, neither woven nor dyed nor painted. A figure like a serpent, scaled in scarlet and gold, ran the entire length, but it had scaled legs and feet with five long golden claws on each, and a great head with a golden mane and eyes like the sun. The stirring of the banner made it seem to move, scales glittering like precious metals and gems, alive, and he almost thought he could hear it roar defiance. "What is it?" he said. Moraine answered slowly. "The banner of the Lord of the Morning, when he led the forces of light against the shadow. The banner of Luz Theron Telamon. The banner of the dragon." Loyal almost dropped his end.
"Burn me," Matt said faintly.
"We will take these things with us when we go," Moraine said. "They were not put here by chance, and I must know more." Her fingers brushed her pouch, where the pieces of the shattered seal were. "It is too late in the day for starting now. We will rest and eat, but we will leave early. The blight is all around here, not as along the border, and strong. Without the green man, this place cannot hold long." "Let me down," she told Nynaeve and Egwene. "I must rest." Rand became aware of what he had been seeing all along, but not noticing. Dead brown leaves falling from the great oak. Dead leaves rustling thick on the ground in the breeze, brown mixed with petals dropped from thousands of flowers. The green man had held back the blight, but already the blight was killing what he made. "It is done, isn't it?" he asked Moraine. "It is finished." The Aes Sedai turned her head on its pillow of cloaks. Her eyes seemed as deep as the eye of the world. "We have done what we came here to do. From here you may live your life as the pattern weaves. Eat, then sleep, Randall Thor. Sleep, and dream of home." Chapter 53. The Last Chapter. The Wheel Turns. Dawn revealed devastation in the Green Man's garden. The ground was thick with fallen leaves, almost knee-deep in places. All the flowers were gone except a few clinging desperately to the edge of the clearing. Little could grow in the soil under an oak, but a thin circle of flowers and grass centered on the thick trunk above the green man's grave. The oak itself retained only half its leaves, and that was far more than any other tree had, as if some remnant of the green man still fought to hold there. The cool breezes had died, replaced by a growing, sticky heat. The butterflies were gone, the birds silent. It was a silent group who prepared to leave. Rand climbed into the bay's saddle with a sense of loss.
"It shouldn't be this way. Blood and ashes, we won."
"I wish he had found his other place," Egwene said as she mounted Bella. A litter, fashioned by Lan, was slung between the shaggy mare and Aldeeb to carry Moraine. Nynaeve would ride beside with the white mare's reins. The wisdom dropped her eyes whenever she saw Lan glance at her, avoiding his gaze. The warder looked at her whenever her eyes were averted, but he would not speak to her. No one had to ask who Egwene meant.
"It is not right," Loyal said, staring at the oak.
The Ogier was the only one still not mounted.
"It is not right that Tree Brother should fall to the blight."
He handed the reins of his big horse to Rand.
"Not right."
Lan opened his mouth as the Ogier walked to the great oak. Moraine, lying on the litter, weakly raised her hand, and the warder said nothing. Before the oak, Loyal knelt, closing his eyes and stretching out his arms. The tufts on his ears stood straight as he lifted his face to the sky. And he sang. Rand could not say if there were words, or if it was pure song.
In that rumbling voice, it was as if the earth sang. Yet he was sure he heard the birds trilling again, and spring breezes sighing softly, and the sound of butterfly wings. Lost in the song, he thought it lasted only minutes. But when Loyal lowered his arms and opened his eyes, he was surprised to see the sun stood well above the horizon. It had been touching the trees when the Ogier began. The leaves still on the oak seemed greener and more firmly attached than before. The flowers encircling it stood straighter, the morning stars white and fresh, the lover's knots a strong crimson. Mopping sweat from his broad face, Loyal rose and took his reins from Rand. His long eyebrows drooped, abashed, as if they might think he had been showing off.
"I've never sung so hard before. I could not have done it if something of Tree Brother was not still there. My tree songs do not have his power."
When he settled himself in his saddle, there was satisfaction in the look he gave the oak and the flowers.
"This little space, at least, will not sink into the blight. The blight will not have Tree Brother."
"You are a good man, Ogier," Lan said. Loyal grinned.
"I will take that as a compliment, but I do not know what Elder Haman would say."
They rode in a single file, with Matt behind the warder, where he could use his bow to effect if needed, and Perrin bringing up the rear with his axe across the pommel of his saddle. They crested a hill, and in an eye blink the blight was all around them, twisted and rotted in virulent rainbow hues. Rand looked over his shoulder, but the green man's garden was nowhere to be seen. Only the blight stretching behind them, as before. Yet he thought, just for a moment, that he saw the towering top of the oak tree, green and lush, before it shimmered and was gone. Then there was only the blight. He half expected they would have to fight their way out as they fought their way in, but the blight was as quiet and still as death. Not a single branch trembled, as if to lash at them, nothing screamed or howled, neither nearby nor in the distance. The blight seemed to crouch, not to pounce, but as if it had been struck a great blow and waited for the next to fall. Even the sun was less red. When they passed the necklace of lakes, the sun hung not far past its zenith. Land kept them well away from the lakes and did not even look at them. But Rand thought the seven towers seemed taller than when he first saw them. He was sure the jagged tops were further from the ground, and above them something almost seen, seamless towers gleaming in the sun, and banners with golden cranes flying on the wind. He blinked and stared, but the towers refused to vanish completely. They were there at the edge of vision until the blight hid the lakes once more. Before sunset, the warder chose a campsite, and Moraine had Nynaeve and Egwene help her up to set wards. The Aes Sedai whispered in the other women's ears before she began. Nynaeve hesitated, but when Moraine closed her eyes, all three women did so together. Rand saw Matt and Perrin staring and wondered how they could be surprised. "Every woman is an Aes Sedai," he thought mirthlessly. "The light helped me, so am I." Bleakness held his tongue. "Why is it so different?" Perrin asked as Egwene and the Wisdom helped Moraine to her bed. "It feels..." His thick shoulders shrugged as if he could not find the word. "We struck a mighty blow at the Dark One," Moraine replied, settling herself with a sigh. "The Shadow will be a long time recovering."
"How?" Matt demanded. "What do we do?"
"Sleep," Moraine said. "We are not out of the blight yet." But the next morning, still nothing changed that Rand could see. The blight faded as they rode south, of course. Twisted trees were replaced by straight. The stifling heat diminished. Rotting foliage gave way to the merely diseased. And then not diseased, he realized. The forest around them became red with new growth, thick on the branches. Buds sprouted on the undergrowth, creepers covered the rocks with green, and new wildflowers dotted the grass as thick and bright as where the green man walked. It was as if spring, so long held back by winter, now raced to catch up to where it should be. He was not the only one who stared. "A mighty blow," Moraine murmured, and would say no more. Climbing wild rose entwined the stone column marking the border. Men came out of the watchtowers to greet them. There was a stunned quality to their laughter, and their eyes shone with amaze, as if they could not believe the new grass under their steel-clad feet.
"The light has conquered the shadow,"
A great victory in Tarwin's Gap. We have had the message. Victory! The light blesses us again.
King Issar is strong in the light, Lan replied to all their shouts. The watchman wanted to tend Moraine, or at least send an escort with them, but she refused it all. Even flat on her back on a litter, the Aes Sedai's presence was such that the armored men fell back, bowing and acceding to her wishes. Their laughter followed as Rand and the others rode on. In the late afternoon, they reached Fal'dara, to find the grim-walled city ringing with celebration. Ringing in truth. Rand doubted if there could be a bell in the city not clanging, from the tiniest silver harness chime to great bronze gongs in their tower tops. The gates stood wide open, and men ran laughing and singing in the streets, flowers stuck in their topknots and the crevices of their armor. The common people of the town had not yet returned from Falmoran, but the soldiers were newly come from Tarwin's Gap, and their joy was enough to fill the streets.
"Victory in the Gap! We won! A miracle in the Gap! The Age of Legends has come back!"
"Spring!" a grizzled old soldier laughed as he hung a garland of morning stars around Rand's neck. His own topknot was a white cluster of them. "The light blesses us with spring once more." Learning they wanted to go to the keep, a circle of men clad in steel and flowers surrounded them, running to clear a way through the celebration. Ingtar's was the first face Rand saw that was not smiling.
"I was too late," Ingtar told Lan with a sour grimness. "Too late by an hour to see. Peace."
His teeth ground audibly, but then his expression became contrite.
"Forgive me. Grief makes me forget my duties. Welcome, Builder. Welcome to you all. It is good to see you safely out of the Blight. I will bring the healer to Moraine Sedai in her chambers, and inform Lord Agelmar."
"Take me to Lord Agelmar," Moraine commanded. "Take us all."
Ingtar opened his mouth to protest and bowed under the force of her eyes. Agelmar was in his study, with his swords and armor back on their racks, and his was the second face that did not smile. He wore a troubled frown that deepened when he saw Moraine carried in on her litter by liveried servants. Women in the black and gold fluttered over, bringing the Aes Sedai to him without a chance to freshen herself or be brought the healer. Loyal carried the gold chest. The pieces of the seal were still in Moraine's pouch. Luz Theron Kinslayer's banner was wrapped in her blanket roll and still tied behind Aldib's saddle. The groom who had led the white mare away had received the strictest orders to see the blanket roll was placed untouched in the chambers assigned to the Aes Sedai.
"Peace," the Lord of Fal'dara muttered.
"Are you injured, Moraine Sedai?"
"Ingtar, why have you not seen the Aes Sedai to her bed and brought the healer to her?"
"Be still, Lord Agelmar," Moraine said. "Ingtar has done as I commanded him. I am not so frail as everyone here seems to think."
She motioned two of the women to help her to a chair. For a moment they clasped their hands, exclaiming that she was too weak, that she should be in a warm bed, and the healer brought, and a hot bath. Moraine's eyebrows lifted. The women shut their mouths and abruptly hurried to wait her into the chair. As soon as she was settled, she waved them away irritably.
"I would speak with you, Lord Agelmar."
Agelmar nodded, and Ingtar waved the servants from the room. The Lord of Fal'dara eyed those who remained expectantly, especially, Rand thought, Loyal and the golden chest.
"We hear," Moraine said, as soon as the door shut behind Ingtar, "that you won a great victory in Tarwin's Gap."
"Yes," Agelmar said slowly, his troubled frown returning. "Yes, Aes Sedai, and no. The half-men and their trollocs were destroyed to the last, but we barely fought. A miracle, my men call it. The earth swallowed them, the mountains buried them. Only a few Drekkar were left, too frightened to do else but fly north as fast as they could."
"A miracle indeed," Moraine said. "And spring has come again."
"A miracle," Agelmar said, shaking his head. "But, Moraine Sedai, men say many things about what happened in the Gap. That the light took on flesh and fought for us. That the Creator walked in the Gap to strike at the shadow. But I saw a man, Moraine Sedai. I saw a man, and what he did cannot be, must not be."
"The wheel weaves as the wheel wills, Lord of Fal'dara."
"As you say, Moraine Sedai.
And Padan Fain? He is secure? I must speak with him when I am rested.
He is held as you commanded, Aes Sedai, whining at his guards half the time and trying to command them the rest. But...
Peace, Moraine Sedai. What of you in the Blight? You found the green man?
I see his hand in the new things growing.
We found him, she said flatly. The green man is dead, Lord Agalmar, and the eye of the world is gone. There will be no more quests by young men seeking glory.
The Lord of Faldara frowned, shaking his head in confusion.
Dead? The green man? He cannot be. Then you were defeated? But the flowers and the growing things.
We won, Lord Agalmar. We won, and the land freed from winter is the proof. But I fear the last battle has not yet been fought.
Rand stirred, but the Aes Sedai gave him a sharp look, and he stood still again.
The Blight still stands, and the forges of Thakandar still work below Sheol Ghul. There are many half-men yet, and countless Trollocs. Never think the need for watchfulness in the Borderlands is gone.
I did not think it so, Aes Sedai, he said stiffly.
Moraine motioned for Loyal to set the gold chest at her feet, and when he did, she opened it, revealing the horn.
The Horn of Valir, she said,
and Agalmar gasped. Rand almost thought the man would kneel.
With that, Moraine Sedai, it matters not how many half-men or Trollocs remain. With the heroes of old come back from the tomb, we will march to the blasted lands and level Sheol Ghul.
No!
Agalmar's mouth fell open in surprise, but Moraine continued calmly.
I did not show it to you to taunt you, but so that you will know that in whatever battles yet come, our might will be as great as that of the Shadow. Its place is not here. The horn must be carried to Ilion. It is there, if fresh battles threaten, that it must rally the forces of the Light. I will ask an escort of your best men to see that it reaches Ilion safely. There are dark friends still, as well as half-men and Trollocs, and those who come to the horn will follow whoever wins it. It must reach Ilion.
It shall be as you say, Aes Sedai.
But when the lid of the chest closed, the Lord of Faldara looked like a man being denied his last glimpse of the light.
7 days later,
bells still rang in Faldara. The people had returned from Falmoran, adding their celebration to that of the soldiers, and shouts and singing blended with the pealing of bells on the long balcony where Rand stood. The balcony overlooked Agalmar's private gardens, green and flowering, but he did not give them a second look. Despite the sun high in the sky, spring in Shinar was cooler than he was used to, yet sweat glistened on his bare chest and shoulders as he swung the Heronmark blade, each move precise yet distant from where he floated in the void. Even there he wondered how much joy there would be in the town if they knew of the banner Moraine still kept hidden.
Good, sheepherder.
Leaning against the railing with his arms folded across his chest, the warder watched him critically.
You are doing well, but don't push so hard. You can't become a blade master in a few weeks.
The void vanished like a pricked bubble.
I don't care about being a blade master. It's a blade master's blade, sheepherder. I just want my father to be proud of me.
His hand tightened on the rough leather of the hilt.
I just want Tam to be my father.
He slammed the sword into its scabbard.
Anyway, I don't have a few weeks.
Then you've not changed your mind?
Would you?
Lan's expression had not altered. The flat planes of his face looked as if they could not change.
You won't try to stop me, or Moraine Sedai?
You can do as you will, sheepherder, or as the pattern weaves for you. The warder straightened. I'll leave you now. Rand turned to watch Lan go and found Egwene standing there.
Changed your mind about what, Rand?
He snatched up his shirt and coat, suddenly feeling the cool.
I'm going away, Egwene.
Where?
Somewhere. I don't know.
He did not want to meet her eyes, but he could not stop looking at her. She wore red wild roses twined in her hair, flowing about her shoulders. She held her cloak close, dark blue, and embroidered along the edge with a thin line of white flowers in the Shinaran fashion, and the blossoms made a line straight up to her face. They were no paler than her cheeks. Her eyes seemed so large and dark.
Away. I'm sure Moraine Sedai will not like you just going off. After what you've done, you deserve some reward.
Moraine Sedai does not know I am alive. I have done what she wanted, and that's an end to it. She doesn't even speak to me when I go to her. Not that I've tried to stay close to her, but she's avoided me. She won't care if I go, and I don't care if she does.
Moraine is still not completely well, Rand.
She hesitated.
I have to go to Tarvalen for my training. Nynaeve is coming, too. And Matt still needs to be healed of whatever binds him to that dagger. And Perrin wants to see Tarvalen before he goes... wherever. You could come with us. And wait for some Aes Sedai besides Moraine to find out what I am and gentle me?
His voice was rough, almost a sneer. He could not change it.
Is that what you want?
No. He knew he would never be able to tell her how grateful he was that she had not hesitated before answering.
Rand, you aren't afraid.
They were alone, but she looked around and still lowered her voice.
Moraine Sedai says you don't have to touch the true source. If you don't touch Sidene, if you don't try to wield the power, you'll be safe.
Oh, I won't ever touch it again. Not if I have to cut my hand off first. What if I can't stop? I never tried to wield it, not even at the eye.
What if I can't stop? Will you go home, Rand? Your father must be dying to see you. Even Matt's father must be dying to see him by now. I'll be coming back to Women's Field next year. For a little while, at least.
He rubbed his palm over the hilt of his sword, feeling the bronze heron.
My father. Home. Light, how I want to see.
Not home.
Some place where there aren't any people to hurt if I can't stop myself. Somewhere alone.
Suddenly it felt as cold as snow on the balcony.
I'm going away, but not home. Egwene. Egwene, why did you have to be one of those...
He put his arms around her and whispered into her hair.
Not ever home.
In Agilmar's private garden, under a thick bower dotted with white blossoms, Moiraine shifted on her bedchair. The fragments of the seal lay on her lap, and the small gem she sometimes wore in her hair spun and glittered on its gold chain from the ends of her fingers. The faint blue glow faded from the stone, and a smile touched her lips. It had no power in itself, the stone, but the first use she had ever learned of the one power as a girl in the royal palace in Kyrene was using the stone to listen to people when they thought they were too far off to be overheard. "The prophecies will be fulfilled," the Aes Sedai whispered. "The dragon is reborn." The end of the first book of The Wheel of Time.